Where the Ways Divide by Vainglorious, read by Cookie Mom 6067. They find the runner on the planet with the deadly sun. He's thin and dirty and not particularly interested in talking. For some reason, he thinks the squad is after him. More likely, the guards left at the ring are in his way. The sun might have fried his thinking, or maybe he hasn't been around people in so long he's forgotten how to speak. Either way, he makes a really dumb decision and tries to take them on. He has a big gun with ammunition that cracks in the ears and splinters the trees. It'll break a body just as easily, but the runner is almost tentative in his aim. He doesn't go for the kill. Conserving ammo or conserving life, it's hard to tell. All the same, he manages to take Ara and Rakai as hostages. Morons. They were probably too busy kissing to be alert. It doesn't last long. Ronan easily sneaks up behind him unseen and knocks him unconscious with a single blow to the head. Rakai says to kill him, maybe so Ara will forget he was stupid enough to let the man capture them in the first place. But Ronan outranks him and won't kill the guy solely for Rakai's ego. He gives them back their weapons, sends them to reunite with the rest of the unit hunting Wraith Mad Tyre. In the meantime, as he's binding the man's arms behind him, Ronan finds the scar tissue on the back of his neck. He knows the story before the runner wakes and starts screaming to be released. It comes out of his mouth before he's even fully awake. "The Wraith are coming for me," he spits, twisting in his bonds. "You have to let me go. They'll kill everyone here." He's not visibly afraid of Ronan, sitting across from him in the cavern. Mostly he looks mad that Ronan's got his weapon rested on his knees. "Give me my gun back," the runner orders, as if he's not the one tied up. Ronan has figured out the firing mechanism, and he smoothly racks it just to prove that. The runner kind of flinches in place, maybe surprised. "Who are you?" Ronan asks. "Lieutenant Colonel John Shepard," the runner says, eyes still glued to his gun. "Military?" asks Ronan. The title sounds like it, but it's also unfamiliar. "I was," Shepard says without elaboration. "You have to let me go. Give me that back and let me off this planet." "Because the Wraith are chasing you?" Ronan asks. Shepard looks a little surprised that he doesn't have to tell the story. "Yeah," he says, and jerks again in his bonds. "I called one of our doctors," Ronan tells him. "They can cut it out." For a second, Shepard just stares. "Who are you?" he asks. "Specialist Ronan Dex." "It's in my spine," Shepard says, as if that's not the right answer. Ronan nods. "It usually is. Lots of runners die because they get dumbass shamans and healers messing around in there. Other runners die because they don't run. They stay with people and bring the Wraith. Those should be killed. It doesn't look like Shepard is one of those." Malena comes with the medical team to assist the surgeon. Ronan sticks around until Shepard is on his belly on their portable table, doped into sleeping. Then he backs off a few meters because that much blood is gross, and Malena makes fun of him when he turns green. The doc takes the tracker out with no problem, and Ronan crushes it under his boot. It's probably too late. The Wraith are on their way. They'll be coming after Shepard, and there was a reason Tyre chose this planet. For this reason, the med team hurriedly packs up and takes Shepard back to Satita with them. Ronan stays behind until the darts start whistling overhead. They don't catch Tyre. Ronan sees him and gives a chase, but the lunatic runs into a culling beam. Back on Satita, Kel puts Ronan in charge of looking after the captured runner. He gets the idea it's not a reward. For being so scrawny, Shepard's doing a really good job of menacing the hospital staff. Malena thinks he's cute, in a sad way, like an abandoned puppy. Ronan still has his gun, won't give it back till the guy has someplace else to go. But Shepard doesn't want to tell them where he came from. He won't even say the name, let alone give them the ring address so they can send him home. Ronan asks him how long he was running. 7 months, Shepard says, I think. He looks kind of upset that he doesn't know for sure. Wraith attack your world? Ronan asks. Shepard's jaw clenches. Yeah. Wraith have known where it is that long, Ronan says. Think we're any more danger? Shepard gives in shortly after that. He writes down the glyphs for the ring, but warns that there are security measures in place to prevent just anyone from going through. But when the ring is dialed, no one answers the transmission sent from Satita. Kel won't send a squad, but he does allow imaging equipment to check it out. Ronan sees the video before Shepard does. There's nothing he can say, really. So he just takes a disc to the man's hospital room and lets the images speak for themselves. The ring is intact, but that's all. The robotic camera couldn't get far from it, rubble and debris blocking its metal wheels. Ronan sees large spires lying crushed, water washing over half the screen. Shepard's city is empty. His people are gone. I'm sorry, Ronan says. Shepard uses the remote control to turn off the video. He says nothing. His body is frozen, but his eyes are an ocean. In the Nights When I Am Lone by Vainglorious. Read by Cookie Mom 6067. The runner moves in with Ronan and Milena when he's released from the hospital. There's really nowhere else for him to go. The hospital would have sent him to a state-run homeless shelter. Milena says John would be eaten alive there, and she's probably right. Ronan isn't jealous that Milena calls the man John, since she also uses her most seductive arsenal to convince Ronan to let him move in with them. And it's pretty hard to be jealous of a guy that still looks like a walking skeleton, and yet simultaneously has a personality just like the most stubborn, most aggressive pigs on Ronan's father's farm. Even after half a month in the hospital, Ronan doesn't think Shepard knows he isn't running anymore. The guy still skitters around, his movements jerky and frantic. He eats ravenously, with his hands. It does make meals kind of gross. Ronan knows for a fact Milena's cooking isn't gourmet, and he doesn't mind no longer having to eat leftovers. He tries very hard not to startle the poor guy, not to come up upon him without warning. Shepard still sees Wraith everywhere he looks. That much is obvious. Living with Shepard is interesting. He isn't very talkative. Ronan can't tell if that's innate or just because it's been so long since he's had anyone around to speak to. Ronan knows Milena tries to have conversations with him about his obliterated home and his life as a runner. He's not sure how that goes, but figures she's kinder and gentler than he is, that kind of thing. Shepard doesn't talk to Ronan much, though. When he does, it's usually arguing. Maybe he feels he can't fight with Milena since she's a woman or something. It's all stupid stuff, though. Ronan gets that the guy is traumatized, but Shepard doesn't seem to have noticed that about himself. He's mad that he's not allowed out of the house by himself. If they let Shepard go alone, Milena's not sure he'd come back. Ronan thinks he'd manage to get hit by a train or arrested in less than an hour. They make him a bedroom in their apartment, in the room that used to hold a lot of Ronan's stuff that Milena didn't want in her way. He has to put his things in the basement storage, because most of it is weapons or sports equipment that's also sort of weapons. It's not a big room. They have a little home. Once Ronan's stuff is all cleaned out, it looks pretty barren. Milena worries it resembles a cell. Ronan thinks it more likely it looks like what Milena was intending it to be when she painted it light purple all those years ago, a nursery. Shepard doesn't say anything about it either way. He sort of glances around, nods once. Thanks, he says. So softly, Ronan could barely hear him. Having Shepard around is almost like having a kid, Ronan thinks. What little he knows about infants, they sleep about as much as Shepherd does, and also wake up screaming in the middle of the night. But Shepherd can walk and talk, clothe and feed himself. It's sort of like having an obnoxious teenager in the house. Ronan vaguely remembers going through a phase where he may have treated his parents like he was their hostage. It's embarrassing, but it actually really helps him not lose his temper with Shepherd. They're not so much holding him prisoner. If Shepherd really wanted to leave, Ronan would let him. Report him to the security forces and make sure they took him in before he got in trouble, yeah. But Ronan would let him go. They don't lock Shepherd in the house or anything, but he never ventures beyond the front porch by himself. That doesn't stop Shepherd, however, from arguing with Ronan about it. Shepherd doesn't yell. It's mostly very quiet, very intense whining. And it's completely insane because the door is right there, and Ronan wouldn't even get up off the couch if Shepherd ran outside. Shepherd goes to the food market with Milena every week. She says it's a good way to introduce him to the city and teach him how Satita works. Ronan agrees, sort of. After the first week, they figure out that Shepherd can go if he wears clothing without pockets. Otherwise, he compulsively steals anything he can carry, and it's really embarrassing. It's a good thing the market proprietors are suckers for Milena's smile. Well, good and annoying, because Ronan gets tired of people hitting on his wife. Some of the squad teases Ronan about the runner, about the guy he allows to spend so much time with his wife. In return, Ronan reminds them how much faster, stronger, and meaner he is in a fight, and eventually the taunts stop. As part of Shepherd's rehabilitation, that's what Milena calls it, and Ronan can see the comparison to an injured patient, except it isn't Shepherd's body that's busted, but his soul. Milena decides the runner should work out with Ronan. For his part, Ronan thinks it's a dumb idea, because he doesn't want to do it. He spends enough time with the guy as is. Shepherd's too fragile and weak and will totally ruin Ronan's workouts. But Milena insists, and Ronan sucks at telling her no. It's almost appealing to have another guy around for team sports like Rastignac and Usaliti, except Shepherd probably isn't in good enough shape for those yet. Despite stuffing his face with Milena's food, the runner is still lithe and skinny. Ronan needs to put some muscle on him. Also, Shepherd's still very wary around other Satidans and might wig out if they attacked him, which rules out Rastignac and Usaliti, as well as pretty much every other game Ronan can think of. One thing Ronan knows Shepherd can do, of course, is run. Really fast, too. The first time Ronan suggests it, Shepherd just blinks at him like maybe it's a sick joke, which it kind of is, but they go together to a park on the edge of the city, and Shepherd takes off. For a moment, Ronan thinks Shepherd has genuinely decided to flee, and that thought puts a spur in his step as he races after the runner. And Ronan likes to think that he's in good shape, especially since he has to pass the Satidan military performance requirements every month, but he can't catch Shepherd. It pisses him off and also kind of scares him, since if Shepherd is really making a break for it, and Ronan can't stop him, Milena is going to be really mad. But Shepherd eventually glances back over his shoulder, where Ronan is panting and gasping and pondering lassoing the man's ankles to catch him. Shepherd halts up just a bit, allowing Ronan to pull even. "Hey," Ronan says, breathing like a bellows through his mouth. "Hey," says Shepherd, infuriatingly, not out of breath at all. It wasn't supposed to happen, but the workouts actually end up doing Ronan as much good as Shepherd. Ronan refuses to run behind the man, and the extra exertion melts a little weight off Ronan's middle. Milena says he looks like he did when they first met, and then she tries to find something she can still pinch. Ronan's grabbing her hands because being tickled by the wife isn't very manly, and Shepherd carefully leaves the room, smirking. Ronan does manage to get Shepherd into the training room at the base, even though technically it's against the rules for civilians, especially alien civilians. But Kel approves it. Shepherd seems to think the room is some kind of torture chamber, and he doesn't recognize any of the equipment. "You didn't have anything like this?" Ronan asks, trying to fit Shepherd's body into one of the machines. It's among the first times Ronan's asked about Shepherd's former life, about his people. He doesn't fully expect Shepherd to answer, but he does. "Yeah," Shepherd snaps. "I know what a gym is, but ours had treadmills and bench presses, not Iron Maidens. Ours weren't scary. Ronan doesn't follow any of that, but considers that it's probably a good thing Shepard answered the question and did it without freaking out. The training room does make Shepard stronger, but his frame stays slender, refusing to pack on the muscle. Ronan also thinks it makes him better in the head, like he's calmer and more centered now. They still do their runs in the park at night, sometimes stretching into the city blocks. One night when they got back, there's a local Rastinok team practicing on the field. Normally they head back after the run, since they both smell, and Ronan has to go into the base in the early morning. But Shepard's eyes are on the team playing, so Ronan doesn't protest and follows him to the bleachers. They watch in silence for a while, although Ronan isn't all that entertained. The team sucks, but it's pretty interesting watching Shepard react to the game. "What's the objective?" Shepard asks after a few minutes. "What's the objective of the game?" "Guys in blue want to get the ball into the red square at the end," Ronan answers. "Guys in red want it into the blue square on the other side." "Okay," Shepard says. "And you're allowed to hit your opponent in the face with a pointy stick?"
"Yeah."
Shepard makes a noise that might have been a laugh. "Is anything a foul?" he asks then. "Hitting in the balls," Ronan says. "No fouls in the women's leagues, though." 3 months after Shepard arrived on Satita, he's a lot better. Milena has managed to get him to use utensils to eat most of the time now, although Shepard has almost converted Ronan into using his fingers too, because Milena's adorable when she's exasperated. Shepard still wakes up screaming in the middle of the night, but he's pretty normal in the daytime. Normal for his people, maybe. Still kind of strange by Satidan standards. But he can go out by himself without frantically dodging all the people in the crowded city streets, can even run errands and buy groceries. But Shepard's bored. Ronan and Milena aren't home all that much, especially since Milena increased her hours once Shepard no longer needed babysitting. They don't mention it to Shepard, but he probably knows. Ronan's squad is probably going to get deployed for war games soon, and all the preparation means he's pretty busy, too. If Shepard were a kid, they'd have him in school or something. But he's not a child, he's a fully grown man, with nothing to do. "What'd you do in your military?" Ronan asked Shepard one night when they're in the training room on the base. Shepard's doing upper body exercises, flat on his back in a weight machine. Shepard says, but it's more about the weight he's trying to lift than Ronan's question. "I was a pilot," he answers, heaving out a breath and lowering the weight down. "This machine is barbaric." "Were you any good?" Ronan asks. Shepard turns his head and glares through the machine slats that outline his body. "Yeah," he says almost hotly. He pauses. "Why?" "I was thinking of asking Kel if there's something for you to do around here," Ronan says casually. He doesn't know how Shepard will respond. The military aircraft mostly consist of civilian evacuation transporters, not so much for fighting as fleeing cullings. If Shepard can even fly them. "I can shoot stuff, too," Shepard says after a moment. They're both silent, and then Shepard speaks. "You still have my gun." "Your gun sucks," Ronan says, "because it does." That's how they end up at the firing range, not with Shepard's gun, but with the stuff the Satidan military actually uses. Shepard's not totally comfortable with it all, evidently used to smaller weapons. "Everything's a machine gun," Shepard comments. But after months of training with Ronan, he can actually hold the weapons upright and steady. And he doesn't suck, once Ronan points out the firing mechanism. "Not bad," Ronan says after Shepard completely destroys the practice target. He's not sure that it'll be enough to convince Kel. Shepard's still scrawnier than a first-year cadet, and who knows if the military he came from had any kind of structure or hierarchy. "Tell him I really enjoy killing Wraith," Shepard says, maybe reading the uncertainty on Ronan's face. Kel approves Ronan's request, gives Shepard a field commission equivalent to a recent academy graduate, and assigns him to Ronan's squad. It's a little suspicious how easy it is, and a couple of the other specialists tell him Kel's interested in the ancestor technology they saw on Shepard's world. Ronan doesn't point out that what they're getting is the man, who has nothing material from his home. Getting Shepard ready to report for duty is actually the hardest part. It takes a while to find armor narrow enough for his frame, and the supply clerk makes endless fun of Shepard because some of the equipment is in women's sizes. "I'm not little," Shepard retorts, trying to lace up the chest plate. "Yeah, you are," Ronan tells him, watching but not helping. "I look like something out of Gladiator," Shepard says, looking at himself in the mirror. He knocks on the metal shoulder, or the Tin Man. Ronan has no idea what he's talking about. "Don't let them give you shit," he says, referring to the rest of the squad. They will, because Shepard is little, and he really does look strange and somehow more alien in Satidan armor. But he was also a runner, and he survived for 7 damn months. So if they give him too much shit, Ronan will help him distribute beatings. Shepard's eyes are big, the only sign of anxiety. His chin is set firmly. "Klingons of the Pegasus Galaxy," he says, nodding. "What's a Klingon?" For a second, Shepard pauses. "People from my galaxy," he says, after a moment. For the first time, his gaze is distant and cloudy. "Badass," he says, coming back and blinking at Ronan. "Honorable badasses." That sounds all right by Ronan. Shepard fits right in on the squad, mostly because he can handle himself. Ronan only catches him fighting a couple of times, and both times he's holding his own. He doesn't intervene because Shepard doesn't need it. Rakai, however, has probably earned the ass-kicking Shepard deals him. Evidently, someone is still holding a grudge about being taken hostage. Kel sends Shepard off to get trained to fly troop transports. He stays in the training barracks, and for the first time in forever, Ronan and Milena are home alone. It's strange and quiet, even though Shepard isn't exactly a noisy presence. "He's coming back, right?" Milena checks, arms crossed. "Right?" Ronan shrugs. "Unless he crashes," he says, which makes Milena punch him hard in the arm. Shepard doesn't crash, so he comes home with a few choice words about how he thinks Satidan aircraft suck. He also has a black eye, which means he probably shared this opinion with a mechanic or flight instructor. He passed the test, though, so he's certified as a pilot. Shortly, Kel officially designates him as the flight officer in Ronan's unit. Technically, it's a promotion, even if it's still a field commission. Ronan's unit takes Shepard out to the tavern and gets him completely wasted. While he's feeling no pain, Rakai tattoos the unit symbol on Shepard's neck. Ronan doesn't even think Shepard notices it, too busy drunkenly trying to free himself after being pinned to the sticky floor. They get home around daybreak, staggering inside together. Milena wakes up, or was waiting up for them, and immediately scolds them both for letting Rakai do that in a place as unsanitary as the tavern floor. She said the same thing to Ronan and slapped him when he got his. Milena plants Shepard in the bathroom, and Ronan follows because the guy is still having trouble staying upright without falling over. "She's going to clean it," he tells Shepard. "It's going to hurt." Shepard is staring into the bathroom mirror, neck craned to get a better look at the mark. He reaches up to touch it and winces. For a second, Shepard isn't sure Shepard's happy about the tattoo. "That okay?" he asks, even though it's too late. Shepard looks at him with eyes that are red and wet from more than inebriation, and nods. To the Wide Outposts by Vainglorious. Read by CookieMom6067. The runner fits into the Satidan military well. Ronan wasn't entirely sure he would. Not because the unit doesn't accept him, they do. And not because he came from some strange military apparently full of skinny, scrawny men. He's given up on getting Shepard to pack on any muscle because the man will just run it off anyway. Ronan doesn't even doubt the man's piloting skills, since he knows shit about that topic. Mostly, Ronan didn't entirely trust that Shepard would obey him. He knew there wasn't a real concrete reason to think that, even the first few days home from the hospital when Shepard had hated him and Milena and had acted more inclined to bite their fingers off than take a friendly hand. The runner had never fought him. never tried to escape the house, never been violent. Most of the time, he did what he was told, although the orders had usually been gentle statements about how everyone would be happier if Shepard would take a bath or use utensils at dinner time. Also, Milena had kind of been in charge of that. But Ronan had looked at his new flight officer, John Shepard, and been seriously concerned that the man wouldn't listen to him. Part of that, maybe, was based on the fact that Shepard had been argumentative and hostile while so weak and thin that Ronan could count every one of his ribs. Just because Shepard had never defied him or Milena then didn't mean he wouldn't now, when he's healthy and armed. And something that would probably guarantee Shepard stays in line, taking Milena into the field with the squad, wasn't an option. But for all of Ronan's fears and doubts, it doesn't happen. Shepard obeys him. He even occasionally calls Ronan Master Specialist, his full title only Kell ever uses, and only at formal occasions. Maybe Shepard can tell he isn't entirely trusted. Maybe he's showing Ronan how hard he's trying. Other than a tendency to go after the Wraith with such a pathological ferocity that he has little trouble following orders to do anything else, Shepard does absolutely fine. Ronan doesn't know what Shepard's rank was in his own military, where it positioned him in terms of authority. He kind of suspects Shepard had some authority, or that he didn't and had a problem with authority. Shepard gets along well with the rest of the unit. He and Rakai have settled their differences, mostly because Rakai has tried and failed to kick Shepard's ass a number of times now. Ara likes him, might like him a little too much in a way that will eventually cause Rakai to try and kick his ass again. If nothing else, Ronan bets that will be fun to watch. Marika and Hemi are a little less eager to trust, but they don't have a problem with Shepard. All in all, Shepard fits in well as the new sixth man. Ronan knows the whole squad misses Tyre, miss and resent him at the same time, and it's a little weird that their new teammate comes to them because of the Wraith, when it was the Wraith that took Tyre from them. Shepard could have joined the squad with Tyre there, Ronan thinks. A unit of any size can add a flight officer without any bureaucratic problems. He doesn't know if they would have, though. Without the chaos Tyre caused, Ronan's squad wouldn't have been on stand-down so long. He wouldn't have been home enough to keep an eye on Shepard, and he probably wouldn't have wanted to leave Milena alone with him. And if Tyre hadn't gone Wraith mad and fled, Ronan's squad would never have ended up on the planet where they found Shepard. It's not a particularly fair option if Ronan had a choice about it. He wants Tyre back so badly it makes his teeth ache, but he can't think about condemning Shepard. Not now that he knows him. Milena tells Ronan that caring for Shepard in those first few weeks when he was so frail helped her with her grief for Tyre. Ronan gets that. He doesn't know that he shares it, since he kind of remembers being incredibly angry and sad, and not having much left over to spare for the thin little guy suddenly living in his house. Shepard doesn't show much emotion. He's not shy about letting people know when stuff pisses him off, but that's about it. Ronan doesn't mind, figuring the guy's been vulnerable enough here already. Shepard doesn't wake up screaming when they're in the field. He still has nightmares. Ronan can see him twitching and jerking on his sleeping mat. And when they're home, the screams come back. Neither he nor Milena go check on him anymore. Shepard just claims he doesn't remember the dreams or the screaming and immediately closes his eyes. Ronan doesn't know how he trained himself not to do it when they're on missions. From a security standpoint, he appreciates it. From every other standpoint, it seems really mentally unhealthy. Having a flight officer on his squad is unexpectedly convenient. They don't have to wait for a ship to become available. They actually get one assigned exclusively to the squad. No more pissy pilots who don't particularly want to listen to Ronan and are more concerned about something happening to their precious ship than accomplishing the mission objective. Well, Shepard is kind of pissy when he's flying. It must be a pilot thing. Ronan generally likes to keep his feet on the ground, but he doesn't mind not having to haul his ass across planets when they can fly there faster. He's not the best judge, but he does think Shepard's a better pilot than the temp ones. The ship doesn't rattle as much, the landings are softer, and he hasn't pulled any totally unnecessary aerial stunts that make Ronan puke. Safety regs require flight officers to wear helmets. Odd, since there's no such wreck on passengers. Shepard snorts rudely when given his. It's leather-covered metal with a chin strap, and even Ronan knows all it will do in a crash is make Shepard's death less messy than his own. "Can I put stuff on it?" Shepard asks, turning the helmet over in his hands. "Yeah," Ronan says. "A lot of pilots write shit and glue random pieces of crap all over theirs. Ronan would make fun of it, except he's perfectly aware that he uses his hair in almost the same way. He doesn't know what Shepard will do to his. What Shepard does, and Ronan doesn't even know how, is get two large Urachi goat horns and glue them one either side. It looks totally bizarre. On the back of the helmet, in the space between where the horns attach, Shepard has drawn a symbol in Milena's silver nail polish. A triangle with no bottom, and a small circle above the peak. "This okay?" Shepard asks, presenting his helmet for inspection. Ronan shrugs. "Yeah," he says, trying not to laugh. Shepard doesn't seem like the type, but the horns might actually be important to him. Rakai has no such sensitivity. "What the hell are those?" he asks. "Viking horns," Shepard answers. "On my world, there were ancient warriors who wore hats like these into combat," he pauses. "And a football team." "What's a football team?" Hemi asks. "It's like Usaliti without the blood loss," Shepard says easily. He settles his helmet on his head and strokes one of the horns. "How do I look?" "Like a lunatic," Marika tells him. "Like a Viking Satidan," Ronan offers, mostly because he thinks that's what Shepard wants to hear. For some reason, Shepard grunts in amusement. "Yeah, okay." He thinks a moment and looks pointedly at Ronan. "I'm not putting anything in my hair, though." It turns out Ronan's right about Shepard. The mission it happens on starts out all right. They're selling some weapons to a village that the Wraith visited recently in exchange for medical supply ingredients. The planet is heavily forested, and Shepard has to maneuver free of the ring and then up and above the tree branches. The ship shakes lightly, and the trees scrape loudly against the sides of the vessel. "Sorry," Shepard apologizes when everyone winces at the noise. "Please return your seats and tray tables to the upright position." "What?" asks Ara, clutching her seat and staring out the window. For as much as she has a crush on Shepard, she likes what he actually does for the team the least. "Nothing," Shepard says. "Hold on." "Look at that," Hemi remarks after a few moments. He's talking about the destruction on the ground, strikingly visible from above. "Ugh," Marika says. "I know why we're bringing weapons." "How long ago were the Wraith here?" asks Shepard. "Couple months, I think," answers Ronan. "It doesn't look like a culling," Hemi says. He's right, and it also doesn't look like total devastation. That's odd, because the Wraith rarely visit a village and do something other than those two things. No one says anything, and the flight falls silent. Ronan wonders if Shepard saw his world after it was destroyed. "I'll set her down over there," Shepard says eventually, pointing to a clear patch between the forest and the village. "Okay?" He does, the ship loud enough and landing close enough to announce their presence to the village. No one has come to meet them, maybe afraid to get that close to the ship and its thundering engines. "Wraith were here, too," Ara announces, looking at the burned patches of soil surrounding their landing spot. Ronan agrees, and they automatically drift into formation, weapons at the ready. Even though the Wraith are gone and unlikely to come back soon. It's unsettling to walk through the damaged landscape as they get closer to the village. Shepard landed as near to it as he could. "This is creepy," Rakai says, eyeing the blackened shrubbery. "It's giving me the willies," Shepard says, and Ronan has no idea what that means, but it sounds like he's agreeing. Rakai, of course, never misses an opportunity to jump on Shepard. "What?" he snaps. "I don't have a willy." Shepard snorts, then swallows a laugh. "If you say so," he says, smirking. "Have you been here before?" Marika asks Shepard curiously. Shepard shrugs. "No, I don't know. Don't think so." He's not looking at her, and his face is shuttered, clearly uninterested in this topic. "You must have been a lot of places," Ara remarks. Shepard walks faster. "None I ever want to see again." By then they're at the village entrance, and the people can see them approaching. Ronan can tell at a glance why they needed Satidan help. At best, these people have spears and arrows to hunt, not fight the Wraith. The village is in shambles. Half the structures burned down or completely flattened. "Look friendly," he tells his squad, for whatever good it will do. Shepard, at least, takes off his ridiculous horned helmet and tucks it under his arm. And that's when everything goes to hell. One of the villagers peering at the group does a visible double take. He drops his load of gathered debris to the ground with a clatter and scrambles backwards. "Wraithbringer!" he yells, sounding shocked. And then he screams it even louder. "Wraithbringer!" Shepard figures it out faster than everyone else. "We have to get the hell out of here," he says, stopping in his tracks. The villagers out in the open are fleeing into their huts, but the men are coming back out, armed with crossbows. "Is he talking about Shepard?" asks Rakai, sneering at the crossbows. Ronan hears the strings drawing back and the bows releasing, arrows whistling through the air in their direction. One flies straight at Rakai, striking his flank armor and deflecting into the dirt with a strange thwap. "Ow!" Rakai says, more surprised than hurt. "Hey!" He racks his gun, looking at Ronan. "Ronan," Shepard says, "we have to go." "No," Ronan tells Rakai, who wants to start killing people. "Retreat," he orders, before one of those arrows actually finds its mark. "Run. Warning fire only." Run they do, arrows hitting the dirt behind their feet until they reach the cover of the forest. Ara and Hemi going backwards with cover fire that's aimed toward the sky. Ronan finally stops behind a cluster of thick trunks. He can hear their pursuers' footsteps, definitely between them and the ship. "You have been here before," Marika tells Shepard as they hunker down, keeping her voice casual. Ronan almost tells Marika to shut the hell up. Shepard looks as tense as he's ever seen him. "Made friends?" Rakai asks sarcastically. "You could have mentioned it." "Shut up," Ronan says. "He didn't know." "They're between us and the ship," Hemi reports, which Ronan already knows. "We have to run for the ring." That's an even farther distance, and if the villagers have rounded on them already, not going to be any easier than getting back to the ship. And Ronan doesn't have time to think of an alternative, or even say anything, because he hears more whistling projectiles. It's smaller and faster than an arrow, and then something sharp stabs Ronan in the neck. He bats it down reflexively, ends up holding a tiny dart in his fingers. His neck is tingling, and the next thing he knows, Ronan is face down in the dirt, about to pass out. He hears the thumps of his squad hitting the ground around him, and that's all. Ronan wakes up in a cage. He looks frantically for his squad and only finds Ara and Hemi pressed up against the bars next to him. They both look pale and drugged, eyelids blinking like they just woke up too. The next thing Ronan looks for are his guns. Those are gone. But he can feel the weight of most of his concealed blades, and more importantly, his tiny disc-shaped radio on the side of his coat. "What happened?" he asks Ara and Hemi. "Sleep darts," Ara says. "Cheaters," Hemi concurs, even though Ronan agrees that it's an utterly cowardly way of fighting. That's not really the point right now. "Where is everyone else?" "Got away," Hemi says. "I'm going to stop making fun of that full body armor they all wear." "Shepard?" Ronan checks. "Shepard doesn't wear full body armor, and he's much less good at following retreat orders." "Rakai had him," Ara tells him, which makes sense. "By the neck." That makes more sense. "I saw them as..." She waves a flat palm in front of her eyes, miming unconsciousness. "Been radio silence for a while," Hemi says, flashing the disc-shaped radio transceiver he has concealed in his palm. "Anything?" "Yelling," Ara says, making a face. It sounded like Shepard didn't want to obey Rakai's orders. "Which were?" "Go to the ring," she says, and it's Ronan's turn to make a face. That's when the village leader shows up. He's an older, white-haired man, and it looks like he barely survived the recent wraith attack. Some younger men bring him on a litter, and Ronan can tell at a glance that one of his legs is mangled. The litter bearers gently place it on the ground before the cage, and the old man struggles into a sitting position. "Betrayers," he says, glaring darkly at his prisoners. "We ask for aid, and you come here with a wraithbringer?" Ronan rises to his feet, jerking his chin at Ara for her to join him. She's a good negotiator at trade missions and might be able to talk their way out of this. "Keturah," Ara begins, but he interrupts her. "That man killed my only daughter. He is responsible for the deaths of over half this village." Keturah is very, very angry. Ronan no longer thinks Ara will get them out of the cage with only words. The Wraith killed your daughter, Ronan corrects him. Killed your people. Because the Wraithbringer brought them here, the leader yells. His name is John Shepherd, Ara says, drawing her shoulders back, and he was just as much a victim as you were. The Wraith can't track him anymore. He still lives, Keturah snarls, and my daughter does not. Ronan feels this line of arguing isn't going to get them anywhere. Where are the rest of my men? He asks. They fled, the leader says, sneering, like cowards with the Wraithbringer. Fled where? To your flying machine, Keturah says. It's only a matter of time before my warriors find it and break down its doors. They made it back to the ship, Hemi says from his sitting position, more to Ronan than Keturah. Keturah ignores him. I have told them I will spare your lives if they return the Wraithbringer to me. I will release you all. I only want him. That's not going to happen, Ronan says. Keturah's face gets even darker and angrier. Then you will all be given to the Wraith. What? Asks Ara sharply. What do you mean by that? Ronan's eyes follow the man's old wrinkled hands into his cloak pocket, where he sees a small, ominously blinking electronic device. They promised that if he ever came back and we captured him, we would be forever free from culling in the future, Keturah says. They gave me the means to contact them if the man who they followed here returned. They promised to spare us forever. Ronan has a little trouble following all of that, mostly because it's almost too stupid to believe. If you call them back, he says, they'll just kill everyone who survived last time. Keturah isn't listening. Because I am merciful, he says, if your men turn the Wraithbringer over to me, I will release you before the Wraith arrive. He refuses to listen to anything else. Even Ara, who somehow is managing to come up with something besides how this crazy old man has sentenced Ronan's team as well as his own people to death. The younger men carry Keturah away, back toward the village huts. What was that thing? Ronan asks Ara, in his pocket. It looked like a transmitter, Hemi answers, apparently able to see from the floor, and it looked activated. Ara's face is hard and serious. We don't have much time. She glances at the guards who stand at a distance from their cage. We need to leave immediately. If Rakai, Marika, and Shepard made it back to the ship, Hemi begins. They'd have gone back to Satita, Ara interrupts. Keturah made it sound like it's just sitting out there. She shakes her head. It doesn't make sense. It makes sense to Ronan, in that he's pretty sure the reason their ship is just sitting out there is because Shepard's the only one that could fly it. He's not going to leave us behind, Ronan says. Ara looks confused. Rakai would follow your orders, she says. Ronan nods. Shepard won't follow his. Her eyes go wide with understanding. Oh. Keep watch, Ronan orders, backing up from the bars and joining Hemi on the floor. The guards missed the radio the first time, so he can't let them see him using it. He brings his sleeve up to his face like he's resting his chin in his hands. Rakai, he says softly into the transceiver. The village leader called the Wraith. You need to get back to Satita now. For a second, there's only silence. Then there's static and fumbling noises followed by Rakai's voice. Called the Wraith? What? How? There's no time, Ronan answers. There really isn't. With how active the Wraith have become recently, a hive ship will be on them before nightfall. Put Shepard on. There's no guarantee that Shepard will listen to Ronan, but it's the only thing he can try. Rakai doesn't reply, and Shepard doesn't come on the line. Instead, there's a few seconds of strange silence. Shepard's not here, Rakai says finally. What? I dragged him back to the ship, Rakai says defensively, and he flew it halfway back towards the ring, just to get away from the soldiers chasing us. But then he landed, said he wouldn't leave you guys behind. Too bad, Ronan snaps. We fought, Rakai continues, and now he sounds embarrassed. He stabbed Marika with one of those damn needle things, and she's still asleep.
Ronan waits, and he tied me to the passenger seat. He went to turn himself in, left about 20 minutes ago. Oh, says Ara, sighing. She's eavesdropping on Ronan's radio, periodically looking back at the guards. You free yet? Ronan asks Rakai. Almost, Rakai grunts immediately. He can't tie good knots, but he tied a million shitty ones. A plan forms in Ronan's head. There's no way off this planet before the Wraith arrive, not if their only pilot has undertaken a suicide mission. The Wraith will kill every single person they can find when they come, which he'd have thought Shepard would know. Rakai, he orders, start unloading the weapons and ammunition we brought to trade. Bring as much of it as you can, as close as you can to the village, without engaging the people. Yes, sir, Rakai says automatically, even though he has no idea why. See if there's something in the med kit to wake Marika, Ronan adds. What's the plan? Rakai asks, but Ronan could see the same question on Ara and Hemi's faces. The Wraith are coming, Ronan tells them all, and we're going to kill them. It takes another 10 minutes after Ronan speaks to Rakai for Shepard to reach the village. In that time, Ronan has Ara and Hemi covertly slice through the wooden bars of their cage while he readies himself for the next step. He can see their weapons, piled off to the side by the guards, and those will be a start, but he needs some of the higher caliber stuff they brought to trade. Shepard surrenders to Keturah before Ronan even realizes he's arrived. He's alerted to the man's presence by the village leader's voice. Keturah is carried on the litter again, set down a little distance from the cage. Behind him, two guards have hold of Shepard by the arms. The Wraithbringer has more honor than I expected, Keturah says, sneering. But as I promised, I will release you. Ara rockets to her feet. No! She cries. Ronan stays on the ground, keeping his reaction off his face. He looks at Shepard between the bars, trying to catch his gaze. Shepard won't meet his eyes, focusing somewhere past the cage. Hemi and Ronan stand, and Keturah suddenly looks hesitant, like he just realized just how large and angry the people in his cage are at him. You will abide by his sacrifice, Keturah tells them, or I will let the Wraith have you as well. That gets a reaction out of Shepard, who tenses in the guard's arm. We had a deal, Ronan hears him snarl at Keturah. These are good people. They had nothing to do with what happened here. I do not trust them, Keturah retorts, so he hasn't gone totally crazy. Convince them to leave without incident, and I will let them go. The guards haul Shepard before the cage, while Keturah stays at a safe distance. Ronan crosses his arms and waits for Shepard to explain himself. Hey, Shepard says slowly, eyes finally meeting Ronan's. His body is stiff, and it looks like the guard's grip is hard and painful. I'm sorry, he says deeply. It looked different. It was dark when I was here before. He pauses, gives a choked, terrible laugh. And there was a big, thriving village. I didn't recognize it. We know, says Ara softly. Ronan stays silent. I shouldn't have stayed, Shepard continues. His gaze is distant again, as if horrible scenes from his memory are playing out behind his eyes. I was in really bad shape, and I didn't know yet. He tries to bring one hand to touch the surgical scars that start at the back of his neck, but the guard holding his left side jerks his arm back down. I wasn't sure they could track me. I only stayed one night. He shakes his head and blinks hard. I am so sorry. What happened here was my fault. You have to let me take responsibility for it. Ronan waits a second. Then he nods. Okay. Ara goes stiff with outrage, but one look at Ronan's severe face shuts her up. Hemi doesn't look any happier, but he knows better than to challenge Ronan in a situation like this. Keturah is appeased. Release them, he orders. One guard lets go of Shepard and walks toward the cage door, so Ronan pretends like the bars are still intact. The door gets unlocked and swings noisily open. The path out passes Shepard, and Ronan eyes it carefully. You will switch places, Keturah says, and then you and your men will leave. Ronan tilts his head, indicating Ara and Hemi should walk before him. He glances at the guards by the door and then at the one holding Shepard. Ara and Hemi should be able to read his orders without him having to say a word. They all walk slowly away from their cage, following a line that will bring them past Shepard, who's looking at the ground. It's better that way, because if he were paying attention, he might figure out what Ronan's going to do and try to stop him. Ronan waits until he's parallel with Shepard. "Now," he says, so softly that Keturah won't hear it. The guards will, but it doesn't matter. Ara all but flies backwards to the guard by the cage and kicks him in the chest before he even realizes she's there. Hemi has Shepard's guard by the arms in the next second, promptly drops him to the ground and pins him there. He puts one foot so it hovers over the man's neck. For his part, Ronan grabs Shepard hard. The guy wasn't looking, and even if he was expecting a rescue attempt, it wasn't this. "No!" Shepard gets out, and then Ronan has his arms pinned and a sharp curved blade pressed right against his throat. Shepard grunts and does a stupid little dance move with his feet trying to sweep Ronan down. In response, Ronan forces Shepard down on his knees where he can't kick anymore. He keeps the man's arms held and the blade steady against his neck, his own body draped over Shepard's back. "No," Keturah yells. "What are you doing?" "I'm going to kill him," Ronan says, angling the knife so it looks even nastier. "What do you think the Wraith will do when they show up and he's already dead?" "Guards!" The closest ones are out of commission, but Keturah's command sends men at a distance scurrying nearer. "Shoot me with one of those darts, and I promise he'll be dead before I go down," Ronan warns. "Ronan," Shepard gasps. The knife is so close to his skin that the movement of his throat almost makes him bleed. "What are you doing? Stop it!" "Shut up," Ronan orders. He increases his grip and Shepard jerks in pain. "I thought you wanted to die." Shepard doesn't say anything, and his body goes slack in Ronan's grip. He's pretty sure it's just a trick, so Ronan doesn't let up. "You have three choices," Ronan tells Keturah. "I slit his throat and the Wraith come and kill everyone here. I don't kill him, and the Wraith come, and they still kill everyone here. Or we can stop fighting each other and use the weapons my squad brought to kill the Wraith together." "That's your plan?" Shepard mutters in disbelief. Ronan is sorely tempted to thump him in the head, but he doesn't have a free hand. "Fighting the Wraith is impossible," Keturah says instantly. He pulls the transmitter out of his coat. "I promise them." "The Wraith do not keep promises," Ara says. "They only kill. If you don't stop this madness, you're going to kill your entire people." Hemi jumps in on that note. "You're the Wraithbringer," he accuses, "not him." That strikes Keturah like a physical blow, and Ronan can actually see him waver on the litter. Even better, an outraged murmur comes from the gathered crowd of villagers watching the scene. "We came here to give you weapons," Ronan says, "so you could fight them next time. Nothing's changed since this morning, except that you know when the Wraith are coming. Let's kill them together." "What was the name of your daughter?" Ara asks. "Lenore," the man answers. "Her name was Lenore." "What would Lenore want you to do?" asks Hemi. "Not this," Ronan answers. Keturah is raising his pale, wrinkled hands to his face. He suddenly looks horrified, like his daughter's name has changed his madness from rage to grief. "What have I done?" he says slowly, the transmitter dropping from his fingers onto the ground. "I cannot protect my people." "We can," Ronan tells him. "Let us." "Will you?" asks Keturah, "after what I have done?" "Yeah," Ronan promises. "We'll kill the Wraith or die trying." Keturah stares at him for a second. Then he raises a palm toward the worried crowd of villagers gathered around him. His head dipped, Keturah waves their bows and blowguns down. "They are not our enemies." Immediately, Ara and Hemi release the guards they've downed. Ronan is slower to free Shepard, but not because he fears Keturah. Keeping hold of Shepard, Ronan stands and pulls the man upright as he does. Shepard tenses up, unsure what he's doing. Ronan grips the knife tightly and then jerks it away, dropping it back into the sheath inside his coat sleeve. He finally lets go of Shepard and gives him a hard shove away. The runner staggers, nearly falls, but finds his footing. Shepard straightens up, pulling his rumpled clothes back in order and acting like the entire village isn't staring at him. "I told you," he says to Keturah lowly. "I told you these were good people." Unfortunately, that was the easy part. Keturah's people understand the situation immediately. The Wraith are coming and they need to fight, but bravery only goes so far. There's no time to teach them battle tactics, no time to train them how to use the weapons. Ronan has Keturah evacuate the village of everyone who can't or shouldn't fight. The very old and the very young, the frail and the sick, and pregnant or nursing mothers. Marika, awake now but very woozy and furious at Shepard, escorts the trail of refugees to the ring. They may not make it out in time, but the forest is still safer, and Keturah, both old and injured, should go with them. But he refuses, ruefully fingering the still-blinking Wraith transmitter that started this mess. "It will be suspicious," he says. "I must remain." Ronan doesn't argue with him. Ara and Hemi get weapons distributed to everyone. They don't have exactly enough. Arrows and the sleep needles won't work on darts, but Ronan thinks they'll at least irritate the drones. Might even take them out. Rakai delivers a very quick weapons orientation. Find the Wraith, point your gun, open fire. They can't get more complicated than that. "There'll be a hive ship," Shepard says softly, while Rakai is demonstrating how to reload. It's the first thing he's said to Ronan since he took the knife down from Shepard's throat. Shepard looks worried, eyes on the bows and arrows some of the villagers are still holding. "Isotopic pulse cannon missile," Ara says, overhearing. She steeples her fingers and then spreads them wide. Boom. "We have one?" Ronan asks, surprised. "Yeah, just one, though," she grimaces. "I won't miss." Shepard nods once, but doesn't look all that relieved. "Just one hive," Ronan checks. "I think that's the rules," Shepard says. "Rules?" Shepard makes an ugly face. It's a game to him. "Him?" Now really isn't the time for Shepard to spill his guts, but it's coming out anyway. "I call him Paul. He has," Shepard strokes his face, "stuff like a walrus. So I went with beetles." Ronan doesn't follow any of that and doesn't try to. "He was trying to feed on me, decided it was more fun to watch me run," Shepard finishes. "We'll kill him," Ara says comfortingly. "I'll kill him," Shepard says. "Leave him to me." Ara and Hemi nod, but Ronan doesn't. Shepard actually grabs his shoulder. "He's mine." Ronan doesn't think he can possibly understand what it means to Shepard to kill that thing, so he dips his head. "He's yours." He tips his chin at the rifle sitting at Shepard's feet. "Load your weapon." Shepard holds his gaze for a second, then drops to his knees to open the barrel. "Think we got a chance?" Hemi whispers, when Rakai finishes the instructions and joins them in the impromptu officer circle at the front of the gathered armed civilians. "Hell yeah," says Rakai. "We got 5 Satidans, and whatever the hell Shepard is." "Earthling," Shepard says from the floor where he's racking his gun. "U.S. Air Force." They put Shepard back in the cage, his rifle concealed under a blanket. Ronan hides in the nearby underbrush, and the rest of the squad disperses with civilians into the forest. Old injured Keturah sits on his litter next to Shepard's cage. They don't know when the hive ship will get here, but Shepard guarantees it will be soon. It looks, hopefully, like the sacrifice this Wraith named Paul should be expecting, up until the part where Shepard blows his head off. It happens before nightfall. Ronan can hear Ara on his radio announcing her tracking equipment has a massive vessel in orbit. Marika reports the ring is on and engaged to prevent anyone escaping. In the next second, there are 7 ugly drones standing all around Shepard's cage. "Hey, buddies," Shepard says lowly. His hands are under the blanket. "Long time no see." Shepard didn't say anything about wanting to kill these guys by himself, so Ronan stands up in the bushes and helps. There's odd, awful silence for a few seconds between when Shepard and Ronan stop firing and the last drone's body hits the earth. Then, somewhere up in the sky, Paul figures out what's happened. Shepard's out of his cage and walking, gun up, towards Ronan in the forest when the next dozen wraith boots hit the ground behind him. He flicks his eyes at Ronan. "This is the running part," he says. They both take off, alternating turns of putting as much distance between them and the wraith and running backwards while shooting. Keturah can't run, but Ronan hears the handgun they gave him firing until he's out of sight. He doesn't think about it after that. Ronan gets a glimpse of what 7 months of Shepard's life was like. It's different, though. He isn't alone. The wraith chasing after him encounter Ara, Hemi, Rakai, and Ronan, or any one of the civilians holding Satidan weapons. And Keturah's people aren't doing too badly with their own weapons. It takes about 6 arrows to bring down a drone, and it looks like those sleep darts work on wraith, too. He's waiting for the wraith darts to appear in the sky, but it doesn't happen. Shepard catches him watching the clouds and shakes his head. "I think that's cheating," he says, then turns around and blasts the 3 wraith coming up the path. Ronan can only hope the Hive's weapons are also cheating. It's still a battle. Ronan is bleeding, and he sees people going down and not getting back up. His team keeps checking in, thankfully, still alive in their positions across the forest. Ronan follows Shepard. He doesn't care that the man survived this by himself. Shepard doesn't have to do that today. Paul can't track Shepard this time either. Instead, he sends creepy-looking orbs that float in the air, racing quickly through the tree branches and swerving around tree trunks. They're hard to shoot, but Hemi quickly discovers grenades work on them just fine. But Shepard grabs one out of the air, holds it up to his face like a radio transceiver. "Come and get me," he snarls. "Village Square, come and get me." Then he smashes the orb to the forest floor. Shepard's face is streaked with blood, and it looks like one of the drones managed to do some damage to the left side of his torso. He glances at Ronan before he takes off, back in the direction of the village. Shepard doesn't say anything, but his eyes are screaming that this is the part he has to do himself. Ronan considers this briefly, then follows him. He calls Rakai and Hemi to follow too, and tells Ara to get the isotopic pulse cannon missile ready to go. Paul the Wraith is waiting for Shepard in the village square. Shepard, the lunatic, drops his gun. He charges the Wraith and drives him to the ground. After that, it's a fight. Ronan has never seen a Wraith and a human brawl like this. It's not like normal, not about feeding. He doesn't consider Wraith men, they're monsters. But Shepard fights this one like that's all he is, an ugly, evil man. Shepard is getting his ass kicked. The Wraith is not a man. It's a monster, and it's stronger than Shepard. The 4th or 5th time Shepard is thrown violently to the ground, he can't get up. Paul the Wraith is smirking, striding triumphantly towards Shepard's crumpled body. He has his feeding hand out, poised to strike Shepard's heaving chest. Ronan intervenes. He glances at his battered and bruised squad, and they read his mind, every gun leveled squarely at the wraith advancing on Shepard. "Take out the Hive," he orders Ara in a whisper. Almost instantly, the loud high whine of the isotopic pulse cannon launching sequence fills the air. It's a deafening weapon, even though Ara and the equipment are far, far away. Paul halts in his approach to Shepard, chin rising sharply. He doesn't recognize the sound. No wraith has ever lived to tell another about it. Ronan can't hear anything over the pitch, but he can see that Paul is alarmed, asking Shepard what's happening. In response, Shepard props himself up on skinned elbows and spits out a mouthful of blood. Ronan reads his lips. "Your turn to run," Shepard says, the corners of his mouth tugging up. Ronan takes that as permission and opens fire. Rakai and Hemi follow suit. Their bullets riddle the wraith's body, sending it flying backwards until it lies limp and soaked in blood on the ground. Ronan doesn't stop firing until his weapon is empty, and neither does anyone else. The deafening whine of the cannon suddenly stops, and for a moment there's no noise, and then the isotopic pulse cannon missile detonates the Hive somewhere above the clouds. It's more vibration than sound, the ground and the trees shaking like crazy as red and purple explosions bloom in the sky. It ends quietly. Ronan hauls Shepard up off the ground. Rakai immediately puts a pressure bandage around his chest, and Ronan can see the enormous amount of blood soaking the ground where Shepard had been lying. Keturah is dead, but so are the Wraith and the Hive that killed so many of his people. What had remained of the village after the first time is gone, completely destroyed in this second battle. But there are survivors to rebuild, and these people got their own vengeance today. Marika reports that the ring is disengaged and that they can use it again. There's no time for celebrations. Ronan can tell Shepard needs to get to a hospital immediately, and that's probably true of Rakai and Hemi, too. "Think you can stay conscious long enough to fly us home?" Rakai asks Shepard, supporting him as they trudge back to the ship. Marika and Ara are waiting for them there. Shepard nods, but his skin has gone pale and clammy. Rakai and Ronan are propelling him forward. "Good," Rakai says, "because I owe you a beating for earlier." "Me too," chimes in Marika, but she looks more worried than angry. They practically pour Shepard into the pilot's seat, and Ronan thinks that after surviving this day, they'll die in a plane crash on the way home. Miraculously, Shepard can still fly while half-dead. He maneuvers the vessel carefully up and over the trees, back to the ring. The inside of the ship is quiet except for everyone's labored breathing. Ronan realizes how much his own body hurts, pats himself down, and discovers his clothes are unsettlingly wet with warm blood. "What do we say?" Hemi asks. "At the debriefing?" "Spontaneous Wraith encounter," Ronan says. "Kel doesn't need to know about any of this. Successful with the help of our allies." "Cool," says Rakai as they enter the rippling horizon. There is no immediate debriefing. Shepard passes out the moment the ship hits the launch pad, actually sends it skittering forward uncontrollably until the auto landing system catches it and locks it in place. They all go directly to the hospital. Ronan doesn't think he really needs to. Probably just a visit to the base clinic would do it. Milena can stitch him up when he gets home. But nobody else agrees with him, and the entire squad gets tied to gurneys and airlifted to the trauma hospital. And, of course, Milena is the doctor that unloads Ronan's aero ambulance. Her eyes go enormous when she realizes it's her husband on the gurney. "I'm okay," he says, because they shoved an IV in his arm on the way over that made him feel more tired and less hurt. "You said it was a trade mission," she accuses, holding a diagnostic scanner by his head. "It was," he retorts mildly. "We traded." Then Milena catches sight of Shepard in the gurney behind him, and the guy does look worse, practically green, and with a breathing stabilizer coming out of his mouth like a fountain. She leans down and kisses Ronan on his torn lips, then races over to Shepard. Ronan can tell he isn't awake, but Milena pets the side of his face anyway and tries to find a spot on his cheek that isn't bruised. Ronan can't hear what she asks the doctor examining Shepard, but her reaction is a relieved sigh. She's coming back toward Ronan, but he can't stay awake for her to get here. He just smiles at her and goes into the swirling nothingness. Ronan wakes up in the same hospital room as Shepard, not surprisingly. He's a little concerned with how much he hurts, and totally baffled by the number of bandages he finds on his body under the blanket. Somehow he didn't notice those wounds in the heat of battle. Shepard's still green, but he looks a lot better. He's awake before Ronan, and trying to twist free of the various apparatus hooked into him. Despite the time he spent in the hospital when he arrived on Satita, Shepard still doesn't understand any of the medical equipment, and always wants it off. And Milena knows that, and it looks like she actually locked the tubing down so Shepard can't get it out. "Hey," says Ronan, after silently watching Shepard struggle for a while. Shepard turns his head toward Ronan's gurney. "Hey," he says, sounding hoarse. Ronan cranks his bed into a sitting position, discovers the muscles in his abs are really, really pissed off at him. Shepard watches him, unable to do the same because Milena disabled the mechanism. "Good fight," Ronan remarks. Shepard looks like hell, and there is no way he's getting out of that bed for a long time. Shepard gives up on yanking the IV straps and examines his bandaged hands. "Yeah," he says, looking at Ronan over his gauze-covered fingers. "It was." But it doesn't happen again, Ronan says, totally sincerely. He means all of it. The wraith that destroyed Shepard's world and made him a runner is gone, but the suicidal runner has to be gone, too. There's a beat while Shepard blinks, his pale eyelids staying shut a little too long. Yeah, he says finally. I know. Okay. Ronan moves on quickly. You okay? Yeah. Shepard gives a frustrated kick under the blanket where his legs must be trapped, too. Ronan can tell the movement hurts, but Shepard does it again anyway. I just want to go home. The Known from the Unknown by Vainglorious. Read by CookieMom6067. Ronan Dex's entire squad ends up in the hospital for nearly a week after their surprise battle with the Wraith on what was supposed to be a simple trade mission. The only person who really needs to stay there that long is the runner, who took a beating the scrawny little guy probably shouldn't have survived. Satidans are made of sturdier stuff, and also none of them started a fistfight with the Wraith. Shepard stays in the hospital the longest. Now, normally, Ronan has a foolproof plan for getting released before the doctors say he can go. He just points out to some low-level orderly or nursing assistant that his name is the same as the doctor who's treating him, so of course he can leave. The trick is to do this when Milena's not actually on call, so no one can ask her. And when she gets home and is irritated, although at this point no longer surprised, to find him sacked out in their bed instead of a hospital gurney, she's not going to send him back unless he's bleeding to death. She wants him home just as much as he wants to not be in the hospital anymore, and the part where she threatens to have him chained to his gurney next time isn't very sincere. Although, now he knows she's not totally joking, because that's not a far cry from what she did to John Shepard to keep him in his gurney. Except that Shepard deserves it because he ruins Ronan's escape route this time and keeps them both in the stupid, boring, smelly hospital for way longer than necessary. Shepard doesn't like hospitals any more than Ronan does. Not for the same reasons, though. Ronan just gets bored and restless immediately and doesn't see the point of staying in one when he can go home and lie around in pain just as effectively in his own bed. With his wife, the doctor, who will probably keep him from dying if he pops a particularly important stitch holding his guts together. Ronan hazards a guess that the reason Shepard hates the hospital so much is all the time he spent here when he first arrived on Satida. It makes sense, and Shepard probably doesn't like thinking about back then. That's Ronan's opinion, and not what Shepard actually has to say. "Even your hospitals are like bondage dungeons," the runner snaps at him, trying futilely to get the cardiac monitor off his chest. "Seriously!" After one night and one day, he's expressed this one opinion about 14 times without explaining how it's different from a typical dungeon. Across the room in his own gurney, not actually tied to anything except an IV full of happy juice, Ronan just ignores him. The more Shepard fights, the more the med staff is going to make him miserable. That's got to be true about every culture's doctors. Ronan opens his mouth to ask, but pauses and then doesn't. Shepard will share if and when he wants to. "Hey, Nurse Ratchet!" Shepard calls to someone passing the door in the hallway. A junior nurse walks in, but Ronan knows that isn't her name. She peers at Shepard, clearly recognizing the handiwork of her colleagues designed to keep him in bed and in place, and raises an eyebrow. "Please," is all Shepard says, wiggling as much as he can. When she doesn't react, he tries another tactic. "Look," he begins, "I live with a doctor, Milena Dex. She said I could go home." Ronan hears that lie and sits up so sharply his abused stomach muscles start screaming in pain. Unfortunately, it's too late because the junior nurse is already using the staff transceiver on her belt to call Milena, and Shepard has just ruined everything. "Idiot!" Ronan hisses at Shepard, who just looks at him innocently. "What?" Shepard demands. Ronan shakes his head. If the guy weren't being held together with sutures and stubbornness, he'd whack him one. Milena arrives minutes later, and she immediately looks amused. "This one yours?" the junior nurse asks. Milena nods. "Yeah," she says. "He's mine. Hi, John." "Yo," Shepard mutters, chin up petulantly as he leans back against his pillow. "He's not going anywhere," Milena tells the junior nurse, who nods knowingly. "Oh," Milena continues, jerking a thumb towards Ronan's gurney as half of her mouth curls upwards. "That one's mine, too. And he's not going anywhere, either." Ronan can't control the scowl that crosses his face. "I'll make sure the ward staff know," the junior nurse promises. "Thanks," says Milena. She follows the woman out of their room without another word to either man, eyes sparkling in a way that means she finds this hilarious. Ronan waits until he can no longer hear their footsteps clicking against the floor. Then, not caring how much it makes his back and shoulder throb, Ronan leans forward, jerks his pillow out from behind his head, and hurls it hard at Shepard. His aim is true, and it lands solidly across Shepard's neck and chest. For a second, Shepard is silent. Then he actually moans, and it sounds like genuine pain. "Ow!" "Shut up," Ronan says, slouching back down on the bed. Ronan still gets out of the hospital sooner than Shepard. He doesn't even have to use husbandly persuasion because Kel wants him at a debriefing with the chieftain on how a peaceful trade mission ended in a full-blown confrontation with the Wraith and unauthorized detonation of an isotopic pulse cannon missile. Abruptly, staying in the stupid hospital is almost appealing, except it's still boring and pointless, and now he doesn't have a pillow because Shepard won't give his back. The debriefing is just as dumb as Ronan expects. Kel clearly doesn't want to be there any more than Ronan does. The great old bearded chieftain and his counselors ask pointless questions, and Ronan answers them more or less honestly. The rest of his squad, minus Shepard, sits around the table silently and looks bored and a little uncomfortable. Ronan doesn't think it's hard to understand. It became a combat mission because the Wraith showed up. Fortunately, no one asks him why the Wraith were there. The word Wraithbringer doesn't come up. Also, no one will explain to him why they brought an isotopic pulse cannon missile along on a mission if they're not allowed to use it without permission. They were going to give it to villagers who more than likely would have tied a goat to it rather than actually figure out how to use it. Ara blew a hive out of the sky, and Ronan doesn't see how that could be a bad thing. He half wonders if Ara just took it from the armory because she wanted to, but he's not going to accuse her of that in front of the chieftain. Eventually, Ronan figures out that the chieftain is concerned that somehow, someone on that planet is going to tell the Wraith that the people with the weapons capable of taking out Hive ships are Satidans. "We destroyed the Hive," he says very clearly. "There's no one to tell." The villagers were also a little distracted, but he's not going to mention that, or else Kel is going to want to know what in the hell was going to make them focus on anything but five Satidan soldiers battling the Wraith. "The runner you picked up last year," the chieftain says finally. "He knows about the weapon." Ronan isn't sure Shepard does, actually. "He was severely injured before we used it," he says, which is true, "and he's not a security risk. This man came from a planet that used ancestor technology," Kel announces. "It's possible he's aware of many weapons successful against the Wraith." "His world was destroyed," Ronan points out. Shepard hasn't said more than three words about where he came from, but it's obvious that whatever weapons they had weren't successful. "Has he spoken of ancestor technology?" the chieftain asks, and he looks interested. "No." The chieftain leans back in his chair, knitting his fingers on the tabletop. "Perhaps he should be asked." Kel visits Shepard in the hospital shortly after that. It takes a week or so because the doctors say Shepard's not up to talking. Ronan didn't even tell Milena to say that. She must have guessed. Kel goes alone, and Ronan finds himself irrationally worried about the meeting. It's doubtful that Shepard will have any information for them, and he also knows better than to mention anything that happened on this last mission. The conversation won't be productive, and that could really piss Kel off. But Kel doesn't look particularly upset when he emerges from Shepard's room. He doesn't look happy, though, either. Ronan glances at him curiously from his seat in the hallway, and Kel stops for a second. He says no ancestor technology survived, Kel tells him. Ronan nods, not surprised. He remembers vaguely the few images he got to see of Shepard's world. But he does have knowledge, Kel continues, starting to walk again. It may help us. Ronan goes in to check on Shepard after that. The patient looks much less green, though still hopelessly tangled in various pieces of medical equipment. Hey, Ronan says, arriving at Shepard's bedside. Hey, Shepard replies. He doesn't look upset by whatever Kel asked him. How'd it go? Ronan asks. Shepard shrugs, a slight movement that still looks stiff and painful. I'm not a scientist, he says, eyes on the tufts of his blanket. I don't know shit about what he wants to know. Ronan nods, a little relieved that Kel accepted that response. The taskmaster's been interested in the topic since Shepard arrived. Yeah. Shepard looks up, eyes hopeful. Can I go home now? Milena has some kind of doctor meeting all day, so Ronan nods. Yeah, he says, and starts undoing the nearest straps connecting Shepard to the machines. Everyone's out of the hospital, but Ronan's entire unit is still banged up enough that they're not heading out into the field anytime soon. So Kel schedules about 40,000 meetings with other master specialists to go over Wraith intel. Ronan almost asks Shepard if he can come up with another planet that thinks he's a Wraithbringer so they can go there, but eventually decides that Shepard won't think the question is even a little bit funny. Shepard's under Milena's orders to stay home and recover. She won't even let him out to do practice flights at the training barracks. Ronan's not sure who's more bored. The intel meetings are long and repetitive, but Shepard's locked up in the house with Milena in her meanest doctor mode. One day, while Milena's saying goodbye to Ronan in the front doorway, Shepard tries to sneak out the back, stupid horned flight helmet in hand. Get back here, John, Milena hollers, her mouth so close to Ronan's ear that he jerks back and rubs it. Shepard skulks back into the house. He walks into the front room, puts his helmet on a side table, and crosses his arms. I'm better, he tells them tightly. I'm better, and I'm going out of my mind. Ronan feels for the guy. Milena's never been this much of a hard ass to Ronan. But then again, Ronan's never come home in that condition before. He makes a note not to. Milena only tilts her head. She takes one step toward Shepard, who's trying to stare her down. Ronan watches a little wary. His wife stretches out one slender finger and pokes it, lightly, into Shepard's stomach below his crossed arms. Shepard instantly turns white and actually doubles over in pain. He gasps twice, and Ronan almost thinks he's going to pass out. After a minute with difficulty, Shepard straightens up and drops his arms from their protective grasp around his middle. He turns around without a word, picks up his helmet, and stomps off toward his bedroom. The rest of the squad's occupied with the usual stand-down routine, like weapons recertification and physical fitness tests. They're not going to be allowed back in the field until Shepard can pass his, or at least cheat well enough to pass, and that looks a while off. The squad is taking turns dropping by Ronan's place while Milena's at work, partly because they're Shepard's friends, and partly to make sure he's actually staying there. Ronan has second thoughts about whether hanging out with Rakai is the best way for Shepard to heal, but figures if nothing else, parrying threats will keep Shepard entertained. It's almost like the first few months Shepard was in Ronan and Milena's home, except Shepard's a totally different man. For one, he likes them now, even with the way Milena's treating him. There's no trace of the wild and frantic, emaciated guy he was back then. The stubborn and the argumentative as hell parts of his personality are still firmly in place, though they're mostly directed at Milena now rather than Ronan. But there's also calmness and a centeredness that definitely wasn't there before. The runner has mastered pretty much every Satidan card game in the week since he came home from the hospital. He's also tried to teach them all some games from his home world, but it's hard because the cards don't match up exactly. He's numbered and drawn silly pictures on the Satidan ones to try to make them work, but it doesn't really. Most of Shepard's games revolve around lying and or randomly receiving the right cards. Ronan doesn't understand why that's fun. It's fun because I win all your money, Shepard says. They're using dried salted sticks of aruva meat as money because Shepard really likes it. In reality, Shepard has given every single one of his paychecks to Milena, just like Ronan does, from the day Kel officially made him part of the Satidan military. It isn't necessary, and it's about 10 times what they'd get if they tried to rent his room out, but Shepard has always just shrugged and said he has nothing to do with it. Ronan grunts while Shepard sweeps up the center pile of aruva sticks and sticks one happily into his mouth. Or, Shepard says, looking at Ronan's irritated expression, I could take all your money and then punch you in the face, and we could call it Satidan poker. Okay, says Hemi, and Ronan can see him making a fist under the table. No, Milena says sharply from across the room, where she can't see Hemi's hands. She doesn't even have to look up from her book. One day, Ronan comes home from another endless intel meeting and finds Shepard reading a thin book in the living room. This is strange for one reason. The man can't read Satidan. Shepard puts down the book abruptly when Ronan walks in. It looks like he wants to shove it under a pillow or something. Hey, Shepard says. Ronan glances at the thin pile of magazines lying on the cushion next to Shepard. They're a bunch of children's reading exercises. Ara's brother is a teacher, and she's been threatening since the beginning to make Shepard sit down with his class of 6-year-olds and learn how to read and write. Hey, is all Ronan says. Ara came by, Shepard says, tipping his head at the papers. If you people had television, I wouldn't have to do this. Shepard is awfully defensive about the topic. Ronan's guess is that his world didn't allow soldiers to read. It's not wholly uncommon across Pegasus, since soldiers that have access to information from sources other than their taskmasters sometimes get contrary ideas in their heads. They also can't write debriefing reports, which Ronan almost considers a decent trade-off. That's one thing Shepard can't, and doesn't do, too. Or video games, Shepard continues. I don't know how you can invent nuclear weapons, but not Pong. Shepard calls the isotopic pulse cannon missile a nuclear weapon or close enough, and Ronan has encouraged him to stop talking about it because it kills Wraith and he doesn't care beyond that. Finally, Ronan tells Shepard, I know how to read, the man retorts. And it's sort of true, Ronan thinks. Shepard can read street signs and train schedules, for the most part. Or he's memorized the routes he needs to take from Ronan and Milena's house to the market and the base, the two places he goes most frequently. And he manages at the market, too. But that might just be from recognizing what he wants to buy and pointing. He's got to understand prices and the symbols printed on the Chirica currency. Ronan doesn't argue, since Shepard would probably be willing to stay illiterate out of spite. Wandering into the kitchen and looking for a snack, Shepard follows him. Rakai and Ara help themselves, he tells Ronan. We're kind of out of food. We can order some Elizakir, Ronan says. Milena will pick it up on her way home. Shepard makes a face, even though Ronan knows he likes Elizakir. I haven't eaten enough rats, and I had hamsters when I was a kid, Shepard mutters, mostly to himself. Just because everything tastes good deep-fried doesn't make it right. Ronan checks the cold cupboard, unsurprised to find it empty except for root vegetables. He offers Shepard a fulibi stem, and Shepard shakes his head. Hamsters are fine, he says. They wash the fulibi roots together anyway, mostly because Milena will be much more willing to pick up something greasy and delicious if she can pretend their diet is even a little balanced. So, Shepard says, flipping water droplets off the purple stems, Rakai told me he's going to write my story on my skin. He looks at Ronan, face perplexed. It sounded like a threat. Ronan has to try not to laugh, mostly because he can imagine the conversation Shepard and Rakai had, with Shepard pretending he knows what's going on and trying to antagonize Rakai into actually telling him. What do you mean by that? Shepard asks. Drying off the vegetables, Ronan puts them in the steamer basket for dinner. Then he turns around and shows Shepard his arm. A tattoo, Shepard says, then scowls. I should have figured that out. Rakai give you that? Ronan nods. Shepard peers at his arm, where the tattoo travels from his forearm up to the shoulder, circling both sides. That? He looks closer. That's a story? It doesn't look like text. That makes Ronan smirk, and Shepard catches on immediately. I know what the letters look like, he retorts. That's like boxes. You fill in the spaces, Ronan says, and some parts of the letters. He lets Shepard grab his arm and turn it over curiously, like he can try to understand it. How do people read it? He asks. They can't, Ronan says, unless they were there and you tell them what happened. Understanding passes over Shepard's face. It's a ritual. Ronan shrugs. Does it hurt? Shepard asks. Feels like that, Ronan says, poking the unit tattoo Rakai put on Shepard's neck. It hurts, Shepard interprets. It was a threat. He owes you a beating, Ronan points out, and Shepard scowls. Milena won't let him do it till you're better. I am better, the man retorts automatically. Ronan faints like he's going to jab him in the stomach with a finger, and Shepard scrabbles backwards so fast he slams into the covers on the other side of the kitchen. He glares at Ronan, and then whips the Fulabi stem he's still holding at Ronan's head. After 2 months, Ronan's squad is reactivated without their flight officer. It's only to escort duty, serving as little more than bodyguards to Kel and on his official state visits to various allies. Shepard pouts like a toddler about being excluded, but he still hasn't passed the health exam or the physical fitness test. Ronan doesn't think he's missing much. The assignment feels more like punishment than anything else. Like Kel wants to keep a personal eye on his unit. Non-combat escort duty pretty much guarantees Ara won't get the chance to detonate another unauthorized weapon. State visits are boring as hell. Without their flight officer, Ronan's squad has to crowd into Kel's own state transport. From this, he learns that Shepard is a better pilot than Kel's chauffeur, information he definitely keeps to himself. For his part, Kel probably learns how obnoxious and irritating Ronan's squad is when they have nothing to do and they practically have to sit in each other's laps for hours on end in a tiny, uncomfortable shuttle. Ronan's the only one with any real ability to keep his mouth shut. Shepard's pretty quiet, but he's not here, and the other four are excellent soldiers who quickly get out of control if they're not actively fighting anything. Taskmaster Kel has the rank and authority to get them to shut up, but it's an order they forget repeatedly, and Ronan doesn't remind them. He wants off this assignment as soon as possible. They shouldn't be getting punished for taking out a hive. Ronan judges that Shepard is better when they go to the training room together and Shepard can actually use the equipment without crying. They resume their daily runs almost as soon as Shepard came home from the hospital, but it's a while before Ronan really has to pump his legs to keep up with him like usual. He's pretty sure that the only injury that would prevent Shepard from running is paralysis or leg amputations, so he doesn't take the activity as a sign that Shepard's ready for the field again. But when he spars with Shepard and the guy doesn't wiggle and ride like crazy to keep too much contact from being made with his injured torso anymore, Ronan decides he's healed enough to come back to full duty. Shepard rolls his eyes and sighs dramatically when Ronan tells him. "Finally," he says. But Ronan can tell from his posture and the set of his jaw that he's genuinely thrilled. Milena playfully pokes Shepard in the gut about 15 times the morning of his first day back. He still jerks away like he expects her touch to be agonizing, but it's amusing. "Just checking," she says, when he dances away from her and puts the kitchen table between them. The 3 months Shepard spent recovering weren't exactly wasted. Ronan's pretty sure the guy has a decent mastery of reading Satidin now. He doesn't know for sure, but Shepard has accumulated a small collection of children's learning materials and books, as well as one or two adult readings. He never asked Ronan or Milena for help, so Ronan never offered any. There's not going to be a test, but learning the language of his new home is undoubtedly a good thing. Shepard had only 2 comments about the process. The first being, "Where the hell did the vowels go?" when he switched to the teenage-level readings, and then, "Your language is ridiculous," when Milena asked how it was going. Ronan had wanted to know if Shepard was going to be able to write mission reports like the rest of the squad now. "Hell no," Shepard had said pleasantly. The squad has Shepard back, but they're still on escort duty. At least they have their own ship back, too, now. Ronan makes very sure that Shepard gets the right ship, and at no point is Kel on theirs. If Kel realizes Shepard can actually keep a shuttle level for more than 5 minutes and land without making everyone's teeth rattle, he'll transfer Shepard onto his personal staff, and Ronan is not letting him steal his flight officer. Fortunately, they only have a couple more escort missions, and Shepard never ends up flying Kel anywhere. Shepard asks Ronan about Kel one day, when they're sitting alone in the ship while the Taskmaster and the rest of the unit are off making arrangements to train with the Quastan military. Last time Ronan visited Quasta, he discovered he was incredibly allergic to some stupid purple plant that grew all over the damn planet. So he's staying in the ship, although he can still smell the stupid flower, and it's kind of making his eyes burn. Kel's pilot and Shepard are staying with the shuttles because they couldn't land anywhere close to the city, and it's protocol to leave the pilots in the ships on missions like this, just in case the friendly meeting turns less friendly, or there are unexpected wraith. So Shepard and Ronan are alone in their shuttle, looking out on the Quastan city lining the mountains. Ronan's trying to remember what Milena told him to do to make his eyes stop watering, and Shepard has his boots propped up on the console, leaning back in his seat like he's going to take a nap. But Shepard must be awake, because he abruptly starts talking. Well, first he reaches out and switches the radio transceiver to a different channel, so Kel's pilot can't overhear their conversation. Ronan notices when Shepard changes the radio, and stops rubbing his eyes long enough to glance over curiously. "So," Shepard drawls, "what's the story with Kel?" "He's a taskmaster," Ronan says automatically, almost sharply. This series of missions is the first time Shepard spent much time with Kel. They met briefly when Shepard first arrived on Satita, but that hardly counts. "Taskmaster, huh?" Shepard asks in the exact same tone, still mildly but pointedly curious. He takes his eyes off the windshield and looks at Ronan. "He a good guy?" Ronan understands why he turned the radio channel. If Shepard were Satitan, asking that kind of question is so far over the line. Shepard's gone back to looking at his console and fiddling with controls, even though the engine's off. He must feel Ronan's eyes on him, because he reluctantly turns his face back towards Ronan. His expression is still mild and blank, like he's just asking a harmless question. "He's not Satitan," Ronan thinks. "Asking that question isn't totally different than asking how the trains work, or wanting to know what he shouldn't buy from the market. Except that Shepard never asked those types of questions. He either figured it out on his own, or watched Milena and Ronan till it made sense." "He's a fair taskmaster," Ronan answers honestly. "When he was younger, he had a somewhat more exalted opinion of Kel. Now, with a lot more combat experience, it's tempered a bit." "He wants to be chieftain," Ronan says, "eventually." "Kel would prefer sooner." "Ambitious?" Shepard translates. Ronan shrugs. "Not what I'd want." Shepard mulls that over for a bit. "Okay," he says. "He's really fucking interested in ancestor technology." It's not quite clear how the conversation reached that point, so Ronan just nods. "You guys are doing fine without it," Shepard says, leaning further back in his seat and readjusting the way his legs are crossed. "Trust me." Ronan's squad goes back to routine missions. It's a fantastic change from escorting Kel around, and everyone's pretty much thrilled to be back to the war games and off-planet missions, even when they run into Wraith. Hell, especially when they run into Wraith. Nothing's really different, except Shepard has a few more marks on his torso that almost match the jagged scars on his back. Rakai and Marika give him a different kind of mark a couple of months later. It's not quite the beating Rakai promised Shepard. Ronan doesn't think Shepard would let him do that anyway. Let him try, maybe, but there's way too much pride there on both sides to meet a reasonable end, and Marika doesn't play that way. Ronan comes home from a master specialist meeting on an off day to find half his squad in his living room. Milena isn't home, fortunately, because she'd find this whole thing ridiculous. Shepard is stretched out shirtless on the living room floor. Marika straddles his back, pinning his right arm out and straight on the floor so Rakai can get to work on tattooing his forearm. It looks like there was a short fight. A chair is knocked over and a table pushed aside. But it was definitely for show. If Shepard really wanted to resist, he could easily send Marika flying and start a mean ground fight with Rakai. He's willing. Or he's unwilling to destroy Milena's furniture. Another possibility. "Here," is all Ronan says when he enters and takes in the scene. Marika looks up at him, grinning. Her hands are already stained with black ink, and she's leaving literal fingerprints all over Shepard's back. "It's clean," Shepard mutters, his cheek pressed against the floor. Rakai just glances at him and shrugs. He has a large straight razor in hand. The wooden needle and the striker hammer rest by his leg, a small basin of ink right next to him. Ronan looks at the needle and winces on Shepard's behalf. That right there is Rakai's vengeance for what happened on the planet that called Shepard a Wraithbringer. There's no reason to use a tip that big. "You're too hairy," Rakai tells Shepard, brandishing the razor in a way that makes Ronan mildly concerned. He's proud that Shepard doesn't show any fear. "Don't spill," Ronan tells them. He can see they laid down towels under Shepard's arm to soak up the blood. But if the basin tips, the ink will stay in the floor forever. Ronan leaves them to it, heading out of the room to clean up. While he bathes, he can hear some of the shaving process. Shepard yelps occasionally, and not surprisingly, Rakai is taunting him the whole time. That's going to get old. When Ronan finishes bathing and gets redressed, he joins them in the living room again. Shepard's arm is naked and bare from the elbow to wrist, and Rakai apparently resisted the urge to actually slash him. Two lines of tattoos circle the runner's skin right below his elbow. Shepard found something to bite on when the hammer strikes, which explains why Ronan stopped hearing his voice about halfway through his bath. There's no shame in screaming, though. Ronan knows how much it hurts. But Shepard is content with grunting into Milena's cooking mitt jammed between his teeth, and also pounding his left fist against the floor in time with the rhythm of the striking hammer. Marika keeps trying to pin his left elbow down, but she's not doing a good job of it. "Just so you know," Shepard says, spitting out the oven mitt. "Rakai, if I ever get the chance to tattoo something on you in a language you can't read, it's going to be entirely about the minuscule size of your dick." Rakai all but growls and brings down the hammer so hard, Ronan automatically puts his foot down on Shepard's shoulder to keep the man from arching too far off the floor. Shepard pants for a couple of seconds after that, through his nose, since the oven mitt is back between his teeth. Rakai yanks the needle out of Shepard's skin and leans back on his haunches. The line is done, on this side of Shepard's arm. "Wanna go?" Rakai asks Ronan. "It's my turn," Marika protests, bouncing impatiently on Shepard's back. Shepard twists in annoyance, like that really hurts. She notices and immediately stops, only to drop her hands to his shoulders and squeeze. "Try and throw me off," she dares. "Come on." Ronan kneels down next to Rakai and finds a spare cloth to wipe the blood off what he's done so far. The last line is about Shepard capturing Rakai and Ara the day they first met him. It answers questions Ronan was going to ask Rakai out of Shepard's earshot. How did he intend to write Shepard's story when they knew basically nothing of his life before about a year and a half ago? "I'll do the stuff before that later," Rakai says in response to Ronan's unasked question. He assumes Shepard will eventually tell them. "Yeah," Ronan agrees. He flips Shepard's arm over to the other side, and Marika reaches out to pin it down again. Shepard lifts his head off the floor and turns his face so he's actually looking at Ronan. "That's probably a bad idea, since watching the needle go in can make you queasy when it's your skin and your blood." He's not surprised when Shepard goes a little pale the first time he sees the blood-wet towels under his forearm. "This is so crazy," Shepard tells him, his eyes big. "Don't look," Ronan advises. Rakai doesn't give Shepard a choice, grabbing him by the head and roughly turning his face back the other direction. In return, Shepard jerks his left arm out of Marika's grip and clouts Rakai in the face, knocking him backwards. He grabs Milena's oven mitt again and shoves it between his teeth again. He keeps his face turned away from Ronan. Marika lies down across Shepard's back, using both her hands to pin his left side down. "Don't move," she complains. Rakai is sitting on Shepard's feet, probably going to do something painful and unnecessary that will make him wiggle. Ronan puts his elbow down on Shepard's bicep to keep his canvas still. He feels the needle and angles it directly below the man's elbow, preparing to write about the day he first met Shepard. "You people," Shepard moans, muffled by the homemade gag. Ronan can't identify the emotion in his voice, but it doesn't sound angry. So he raises the hammer and drives his mark deep into Shepard's skin. Ara and Hemi arrive before the night is out. Ronan lets them take their turns driving the needle. It takes a while to completely circle Shepard's forearm, and it's a good thing to let them all write Shepard's story, as they're all in it. By the end, no one's even pretending to hold Shepard down anymore. Also, they've broken into Ronan's liquor collection. The text closest to Shepard's wrist is going to be a little wobbly. Milena gets home around this time. Ronan was kind of hoping they'd be done and gone by the time she arrived. She just shakes her head, though. This isn't the first time she's come home to find the squad drunk and hurting each other, and she prefers they use her clean floor rather than the tavern. "Almost done," Ronan promises her, getting to his feet and leaning in for a kiss. Milena tastes the alcohol on his breath and pulls away. "Tell me you didn't let John drink," she says. Rakai squints at her from the floor. He's very drunk. "Why not?" "Tastes like piss," Shepard announces, which is his general opinion of every Satidan liquor and beer. He rarely drinks anything, unless it's being poured down his throat at the tavern. "You want him to bleed out?" Milena snaps, towing at the bloody cloths under Shepard's arm. "That'd be okay," Rakai mumbles, but he cowers a bit when she glares at him. "Oh, right," says Ara, leaning back on her heels. She gives Milena an innocent smile. She raises the needle up. "Want to finish?" Milena pauses and makes an uncertain face. "No," she says, "I've never..." She looks at Ronan for backup. "You do surgery," he reminds her. "That's totally different." "Come on, I'll show you how." They get Milena on the floor, on her knees next to Shepard, without much argument. "Just one more letter," Hemi says, pointing at the last square of bare skin at Shepard's wrist. "I don't want to hurt him," Milena says. "You gonna wash it?" Ronan asks. "Of course." "That hurts," Shepard mumbles in the floor. "Go for it." Milena peers at him. "What's in your mouth?" "Nothing." He turns his face down so she can't see. Ronan guides her hands, though hers are much more stable than his because she hasn't been drinking. They fill the needle together and poise it above Shepard's wrist. "You have to hit it hard with the hammer," Ronan tells her. "You do not," Shepard snaps quietly. "Not that hard." "Shut up," Rakai orders him. "Otherwise the ink doesn't flow," Ronan says. "Hit it hard." Looking intently at her work, Milena raises the striking hammer and brings it down sharply against the needle. Shepard jerks lightly in place, then lifts his head off the floor. "Hey," he said, "that didn't hurt as much." He puts his head back down. "I like you better." "Do it harder," Ronan advises. Shepard's been back in the field for almost 8 months when the Health Bureau finally notices he never officially passed either the physical performance test or the physical health assessment. Ronan just okayed him on the first thing, and Milena jabbed him in the stomach a couple of times with her thumbs and called it good. That should count, but it doesn't. The fitness performance test is easy. Shepard goes to the barracks and proves that he's just as fast as he's always been on his feet or in the sky, and can hold his own in a fight, even though he's still smaller and shorter than the average Satidan soldier. But for the health assessment, he has to go to the trauma hospital and submit to a full workup. This is easy, too, except Shepard whines about it like they're asking him to chop off a limb. "Can't you just do it here?" he asks of Milena. "I can," she says, which makes Shepard grin, "but it won't count. I'm not in the military. They need an officer to sign off." Shepard's face falls, but then he glances at Ronan. "A medical officer," she points out, and Shepard starts pouting again. She's totally forged 1,000 health assessment signatures for Ronan, though, because getting checked out at a hospital can take an entire damn day, and he likes her way more than any of the military docs. Ronan's not sure that anyone ever actually reads the signature on those things, but it's not a good idea to teach Shepard bad habits. If he got caught, they'd be a lot angrier at an alien runner than they would be at Ronan. "Go," he tells him, "get it over with." It does end up taking almost an entire day. Shepard leaves in the morning with Milena, but doesn't come back until late evening. He arrives home extremely pissed off and with his arms covered in bandages from repeated blood draws. "They tried to stick me in the pediatric diagnostic machine," he rants, slamming cupboards in the kitchen until he finds a stash of Aruba sticks. "That stopped being funny a year ago." Ronan catches Milena slapping a hand over her mouth to hide her grin. Shepard sees it too and glares. "It's not funny," he repeats. "They clear you?" Ronan asks, keeping his tone neutral. Shepard the tiny Satidan soldier is always going to be funny, but the man looks like he's spoiling for a fight, and Ronan just wants to go to bed, so he's not going to harp on it. Of course, Shepard says, still scowling. He looks disappointed that Ronan isn't going to play along and help him get the aggression out. Good, Ronan says, reaching out for Milena's arm to pull her upstairs. Night.
Night, Shepard says crankily.
5 days later, Shepard bails on a mission.
I don't think I should go out today, Shepard says, coming into the kitchen while Ronan's eating breakfast.
He's not dressed, wearing only his woven sleeping pants. He says it totally casually, but Ronan almost chokes on his juice.
Why not? He asks.
Shepard wanted to go out when he was so injured a three-year-old could have dropped him.
I don't feel so good, Shepard says, his tone so mild it doesn't sound like an admission. I have a really bad headache.
Headache, Ronan repeats, staring at him. Shepard nods, one hand up, rubbing absently at his temple.
You don't want to go out.
I want to go out, Shepard says, a little defensively. I just don't think it's going to be safe for me to try to take a flying Satidan tank up today, he sighs. I don't think I should fly today, he says more genuinely. Sorry.
Almost instantly, Ronan's concerned. He doesn't need to be a doctor to tell that Shepard has to feel really shitty to refuse to fly. He also never heard Shepard complain about being hurt or sick, ever.
I'm going to go back to bed, Shepard tells him, reaching and snagging a slice of wurstel fruit off of Ronan's plate. Sleep it off. Ronan doesn't think it's an accident that Shepard waited until Milena left the house to come to him and make this confession. He knows it isn't. Milena would have brought Shepard to the hospital with her. Ronan's tempted to call her, but Shepard's looking at him tensely, like he's afraid Ronan's going to do just that.
I just need sleep is all, Shepard says, I think.
He's pretending like it's a hangover for Mackay's brother's birthday 2 nights ago. Ronan had left early for dinner in with Milena, but he still doesn't think Shepard drank enough to be feeling it now.
Okay, Ronan says.
He doesn't blame Shepard for wanting to wait it out.
Have some Yakira's tea, he suggests, for your head.
Shepard nods, and Ronan watches him while he retrieves the satchel of little dried leaves from the cupboard and crumples them into a water boiler pot.
Who you gonna get for a flight officer? Shepard asks, waiting for the water to bubble.
We can walk, Ronan says.
Shepard kind of grins, then pours himself some tea.
See ya, he says, heading back to his room with cup in hand.
I'm going to tell Milena if you're not better by tonight, Ronan informs him.
The runner doesn't stop walking, but he does look over his shoulder long enough to shoot Ronan a dirty look.
The day's mission goes fine. Simple war games with another master specialist unit. They're outnumbered, and they're on foot, but they still win.
It's good practice. Ronan tells the squad about Shepard's hangover, for which they're going to mock him mercilessly when they see him again.
Shepard's not home when Ronan returns. He finds a note on the kitchen table, Satidan glyphs, written in Shepard's sloppy scrawl.
Greetings, it says. Market for buying meat sticks and drug tea. To be feeling average now. Shepard.
Ronan has to read it a couple of times, not terribly impressed with Shepard's new literacy, but at least he feels better, well enough to leave the house. Maybe it was a hangover. Some ales don't hit you until days later. That'll teach Shepard to let Rakai order his drinks. Alone in the house, Ronan takes a very long bath. He rinsed off at the base, but doesn't feel clean. It's the rainy season now, and the war games all day were spent wading in mud up to his waist. Days like this, he seriously considers slicing off his dreads for how messy it can get. Milena gets home while he's in the bath. He hears her walking around the kitchen. The cupboard's opening and closing. The water is cooling around him, so Ronan reluctantly rises and starts to dry off. She barges in on him while he's patting his dreads, and she's almost as wet as he is.
Hey, he says, raining?
My train was late, she says, rolling her eyes. Flooded track. It floods every rain season. You'd think they'd do something. She gets distracted because Ronan grabs her and helps her take off her soaked clothing.
John, she protests half-heartedly when he pulls her into the tub.
He'll knock, Ronan says, or I'll kill him.
Not nice, she murmurs, but it's practically into his mouth. They forget about Shepard for a while then, until they come out of the bathroom newly clean and dry. Ronan sees Shepard's note on the table next to the beginnings of dinner. Milena's marked it up with red corrections. It makes him smirk. "Cut up the arugula steaks for me," Milena requests, tossing vegetables into the steamer. "Why didn't John go out today?" "Hangover," Ronan says, finding the appropriate knife to start shredding the meat. Milena makes a face. "You didn't warn him about Kavra ale?" Ronan shrugs. "He didn't ask." That gets him a dirty look. "Should we wait for him?" Milena wonders, watching him carve up the arugula. "No," Ronan says, mostly because he's hungry. He goes to throw away the meat wrappings and notices the empty tea satchel sitting in the bottom of the garbage pail. That's kind of strange. There'd been a lot left this morning. Milena sees him staring at the garbage and comes to look too. "What is it?" "Shepard finished off the Yakiris," he says, dropping the meat wrappers on top of it. "He said he had a bad headache." "I thought you said you made him stay home because he had a hangover," Milena answers. "He said he didn't feel safe flying," Ronan says honestly, "because he had a hangover." "He stayed home willingly?" Milena is staring at him suspiciously. Ronan shrugs like it's no big deal. "Yeah." She pulls the steamer basket out of the water. "We're waiting for him," she says. "Okay." "What else did he say?" Milena continues. She looks both concerned and pissed off. "Headache," Ronan repeats. "Didn't feel okay." He walks back to the table and finds Shepard's note. "He felt better," he defends himself. Milena is still squinting at him. "You should have called me. That's not like him." Ronan goes back to slicing up the arugula. "He's not a kid." Milena just rolls her eyes. "You both are." They wait for Shepard for only a little while. It's unsettling, mostly because Milena starts to look worried. Also, it's still pouring rain, and it's dark outside now. "When did he leave?" Milena asks, interrupting the silence as they sit at the kitchen table. "Before I got home." Ronan pulls his chair out and stands. "I'll go look for him." Milena's hands are fidgeting on the tabletop. "He wouldn't have stayed at the market for 4 hours. Where are you going to look?" Ronan shrugs. "You said the trains are backed up." "I'll come," Milena says, starting to stand up. "No." Ronan doesn't need her along to make him more anxious. He already wants to smack Shepard upside the head. "Just make dinner. I'll bring him back and you can yell at him then." Ronan has no idea where to look. He puts on his jacket and pulls the hood up, heading out into the downpour. The market is open all night, but most of the stalls are closed and empty. It's not some place to stay if you have a home to go to. All the same, that's where Shepard said he was going. Milena's right about the trains. They're extra slow. With the limited overnight schedule, it's actually almost faster for him to run across the city. He runs where he can until there's no more sidewalk and he has to wait for a train. The rain is not letting up at all, and he's completely soaked. The weather is cool enough to make being wet, even in his waterproof jacket, totally suck. He has no idea what Shepard was wearing when he left. The market is empty except for an after-hours cleaning crew sweeping up the floor. Ronan asks them if they've seen anyone around, gets a bunch of head shakes. A lot of Satidans know Shepard. They don't know his name or anything about him, especially not that he was a runner. But they do know that he's an alien flight officer, as he kind of stands out when the squad moves around the city. Next, Ronan catches another train and checks the tavern. It's unlikely, but it's close to the market, and maybe Shepard got the bright idea of drinking his headache away. Unsurprisingly, the building is closed and locked up tight. He heads to the base, not because he expects Shepard to be there, but because he needs to get in touch with the rest of the squad. He doesn't think any of them are with Shepard, but it's worth a try. Probably should have checked with them before he hauled his ass all over the city. Worry is itching in his chest, and Milena's probably sitting at home stewing, getting madder and madder. Ronan arrives on base really pissed off and literally squelching in his boots. His clothing and hair are soaked. It's almost early morning now. He should be exhausted, but mostly he's too tense to think about it. After alerting the squad, he's going to have to contact the security forces and send the cops to find Shepard. He doesn't have to do that. A young arms officer sees him squeezing out of his jacket and hurries over before he even makes it past the coat room. "Hey, I was just about to call you." Ronan blinks at him. "Why?" The arms officer shoves a sheet torn off a message pad into his hands. "Security forces office called. The cops picked your alien flight officer up for public drunkenness. They want someone from military justice to go get him." "Where is he?" Ronan asks, finding his chest suddenly light with relief. Relief and annoyance, because there's no reason he should be getting this worked up over a grown-up who can take care of himself. He lets out a breath. "Detention center on the east side," the arms officer tells him, pointing at the message. "Shepard has no business being over there. It's not a great area, and there's nothing there that Shepard even knows about." Ronan rolls his eyes and goes to put his coat back on. It takes a long time to get to the detention center. It's way on the other side of town, and the trains are running even more irregularly that direction. By the time Ronan gets there, the sun is actually beginning to peak above the horizon, and orange is streaking the skies. Ronan's been to a detention center a couple of times. Shepard's not the first idiot on his squad to do something really stupid. The building is black and grim, and the inside is dirty and smells. People only stay here until they go home or go to court. "Flight Officer John Shepard," Ronan tells the desk receptionist. She recoils when she looks up at him. He figures he looks both really angry and really filthy, tries to give her a tight smile to show he's friendly. A security officer leads him back to the cells. He doesn't see Shepard until they get to a large, group-sized cell in the very back. It smells of alcohol and vomit, and there's a man in handcuffs lying passed out on the floor. Shepard is sitting chained to a bench against the wall, elbows propped up on his knees, and his head in his hands. "That one," Ronan says, pointing. "That one's mine." The officer unlocks the cage and enters. Ronan stays outside and watches while Shepard is unlocked from the bench and pulled to his feet. Upright, Shepard looks okay. Stubbly and tired, and really not happy, but not hurt. Sick, maybe. The officer pulls him out of the cell by the upper arm. Shepard looks at Ronan, but doesn't say anything. "You're going to take him to military justice, right?" the officer says. Ronan reaches out and grabs Shepard hard by the back of the neck. "Yep," he lies. The officer lets go of Shepard's arm and gets Ronan the arrest report before they go. The civilian security forces don't automatically transfer records to the military justice department, so when Ronan drops the paper folder in a deep puddle on their way back to the train station, no one will ever find out about this. But he reads the report before he destroys it. Some cop found Shepard, wobbly and disoriented, sitting on an out-of-service train and not getting off. He told the cop he couldn't remember how to get home and promptly got arrested. Shepard's not drunk. He smells, yeah, but not of alcohol. "What the hell?" Ronan asks when they're finally seated on the train. That's also when he lets go of Shepard's neck. "I got lost," Shepard mumbles. He glares out the window at the sunrise. "Your cops are dicks." "I think you're sick," Ronan tells him. "Am not," Shepard curls against the window. He doesn't say it very emphatically. "Maybe." Ronan takes him straight to the doctor. Home, that is, to Milena. "Oh, thank you, Rorik," she says, when Ronan pushes Shepard through the door. "John, where the hell were you?" "He got lost," Ronan reports. He shoves Shepard in her direction, and arrested. "I called you both in sick," Milena says, reaching out for Shepard's face. "Come here." "Good." Ronan wants to collapse on the couch, but he's still wet and filthy. "He probably needs to go to work with you." Milena's trying to check Shepard out, feeling his forehead and touching the glands under his ears. He's not cooperating, though, stepping just out of her reach. When she tries to grab him by the neck and pull him up, Shepard violently knocks her arms down and wrenches away. "Ow!" Milena cries. Ronan's between them in a second, staring at Shepard in shock. "Hey," he warns. "Don't touch me," Shepard snaps. He takes another step back. "I don't know who the hell you are." They end up calling an emergency medical transport vehicle to take all three of them to the hospital. In the 15 minutes it takes to arrive, Shepard repeatedly says that he doesn't know them. It's really fucking weird, and it upsets Milena, which upsets Ronan, and it's just all around awful. Shepard has to be convinced to get into the transport vehicle. He does, mostly because if he doesn't get in voluntarily, Ronan's going to make him. "Did he hit his head?" Melina asks when Shepard is settled on the patient transport board and glaring at them both like he's never seen them before. "Did the cops hit him?" "I don't know," Ronan says. The paramedics examine Shepard's skull then, ruffling his already disheveled hair. "I don't feel any bumps or lumps," one says. "No blood." They get Shepard undressed down to his underwear, not something he wants, but between the two guy paramedics and Ronan, he really doesn't have a choice. There aren't any visible injuries on his body either. One of the paramedics fingers the upraised scars on Shepard's back, and Shepard tries to launch himself off the gurney. Ronan shoves him back down to hold him and holds him there. "What are these from?" the paramedic asks. "He was a runner," Melina says. Her voice is thick, like she's going to cry. "What about these?" asks the other, pointing a gloved finger to the more recent scars on Shepard's chest and belly. "He was a runner," Ronan repeats. Melina ends up waiting with Ronan at the hospital. She gets them into the staff lounge, at least, instead of the visitor waiting room. Her colleagues kick her out of the exam room. She's a trauma doctor, after all. They could use her if Shepard had taken an axe to the head, but he hasn't. And they can't even use the excuse that he knows her, because right now, he doesn't. She interrogates Ronan while they're waiting, like she can diagnose Shepard through his answers. "He hit his head on any missions lately?" she asks. "Rakai smack him around, even playfully?" "No," Ronan says. "Yes, no." She looks at him. "No," he says. "I would have made him go in if I saw something serious. You know that." "Yorix," Melina curses. "He's been here almost 2 years, never even got a cold." Ronan nods, puts his arm around her shoulders, even though his coat sleeve is still damp. "The Wraith tracker," she says abruptly. "It was so close to his spine. Who knows what kind of poisonous shit it pumped into him?" "We don't know anything yet," Ronan reminds her. "He's not going to think about that." "Something did this to him," Melina says, "made him sick." "Could be something that happens to his people," Ronan suggests. "He likes that better than the Wraith poisoning him." "We don't know anything about them." Melina scowls. "He's young and healthy," she says. "No one his age just gets sick like that." A gray-haired male doctor enters the lounge, clipboard in hand. "Dr. Dex," he says, approaching. Melina rises. Ronan stays seated. "What is it?" she asks. He shrugs apologetically. "Nothing obvious," he says. "Flight Officer Shepard doesn't appear to know where he is or who he is." "He deteriorated on his way here," Melina gasped. Ronan's not sure that's true. Shepard barely said a word once he was out of his cell. He might have been keeping silent because he had no idea who Ronan was. The doctor tells Melina about which blood tests they're running, stuff which goes right over Ronan's head but seems important to her. Unfortunately, the results won't be back for 48 hours. "We'll admit him," the doctor says. "Might have to put him in the psych ward, though." Melina makes a distasteful face. "I'm sorry," the guy says. "I know he's your friend, but mentally he's not on this planet." "We'll take him home," Ronan says, standing up. "He doesn't have to stay here." "No," the doc begins, but Melina interrupts. "Yeah," she says, "we can release him under my care. I can observe him at home." "Melina," the doctor says, "that's not a good idea." "Yeah, it is," Ronan says. "He hates hospitals." It probably wasn't a good idea to take Shepard home, but that's what they do. They unofficially hijack an emergency medical transport vehicle and its driver to take them back. Melina sits up front, so the guy thinks it's official business. Ronan stays in back with Shepard, except really with a guy who looks like Shepard and acts like a lunatic. The lunatic pretends like he's falling asleep on the gurney, and when Ronan lets his own eyes drift shut, Shepard slams an elbow into his jaw, swipes a knife out of one of Ronan's sheaths, and kicks the rear doors open. He jumps out of the moving vehicle and rolls down a grassy incline next to the road before Ronan can catch him. Cursing, Ronan jumps out after him. He hears tires squealing as the driver must have seen what was happening in the rear. Ronan doesn't look back, giving chase after Shepard. He doesn't have time. Shepard can outrun him, and his only chance of catching him is if Ronan gets close enough to take him down. They're both tired. Neither of them slept last night, and that's probably the only reason Ronan can even keep Shepard in sight. He chases the man underneath a bridge, through a shallow stream, and into the thick forest that stretches on beyond the highway at the edges of the city. The tangled, root-covered floor slows them both down. Shepard gets his foot caught on something, and that gives Ronan the chance he needs. He launches himself off his feet and tackles Shepard to the ground. The forward momentum sends them both rolling, but Ronan keeps fierce hold on the other man's shoulders. They end up in a tangled heap on the forest floor, but Shepard's on top of Ronan, and he's holding the knife he stole against Ronan's throat. "Hey," Ronan tries, and Shepard presses the knife harder against his skin. His eyes are wide with fear and confusion. He doesn't look like he wants to hurt Ronan, but the knife blade is cutting into him. "I know you don't remember everything. You have no idea what's going on. You're confused, maybe even a little scared. I know I would be. But you have to trust me." "You chased me," Shepard retorts, but he leans back a little. "We're friends," Ronan tells him. "I don't want you to get hurt. The things we've been through together, no disease can wipe that away. Not completely." Shepard stares down at him, forehead creasing in thought, like he's trying to believe Ronan but can't. "Okay, deep down, you know I'm telling the truth," Ronan says. Shepard just blinks at him, face uncertain. "Give me the knife." Feeling a little safer, Ronan shifts on his elbows like he's going to sit up. Instantly, the knife is tight against his throat again. "Oh, nice try," Shepard snarls. Ronan drops, flat on his back in the dirt again. Exasperated, he doesn't try to convince Shepard that he's gone crazy. Another minute of getting his breath back, he can wrestle the knife away. "Fine," he snaps, "then kill me. Then you'll be all alone in the middle of the forest with no idea who you are, where you're going, or what you're going to do next. How could I possibly make it any worse?" Abruptly, Shepard sits back on his haunches, the knife pulled away from Ronan's throat. He considers that statement, while Ronan thinks about starting a ground fight. "That's a good point," Shepard mumbles, throwing Ronan's knife into the dirt, blade first. He climbs off Ronan's hips and stays sprawled on the ground next to him. Slowly, Ronan sits up. "Want to go home?" he asks Shepard, taking his knife and putting it back in its sheath. Shepard stares at him. "I don't know where home is," he says. The emergency medical transport vehicle is waiting for them on the side of the highway where Shepard had bolted. Milena sits on the guardrail, her face pale and panicky. Ronan can see her take a huge sigh of relief when he and Shepard appear through the trees. "I didn't think you could catch him," Milena whispers as they escort Shepard back to the rear. "Of course I can," Ronan replies. He ties Shepard to the patient gurney with the restraint straps for the rest of the journey home, though. He doesn't think Shepard remembers running or surrendering. In another 15 minutes, Shepard is asking Ronan who he is and where they're going. He's suspicious and paranoid, more so now because he's tied up, too. "We're going home," Ronan tells him. "Why am I tied up?" Shepard demands. "Because you tried to run away." Ronan leans back against the wall of the vehicle. He's completely exhausted. "Why'd I run away?" Shepard asks. "I don't know." "Who are you?" "Your friend." Shepard pauses for a while, as if out of questions. Then, "Who am I?" "My friend." They move Shepard's bed into the main room, afraid he'll go out his bedroom window if they let him alone in there. He falls asleep in it, though it's the middle of the day and all the lights are on. On top of the sheets, after only a few questions about where he is and what they're doing to him. "He's exhausted," Milena whispers from the kitchen where she's finally making dinner from last night. "I know." Ronan's exhausted too. Hungry too. He walks over and leans against the wall nearest her. "I called the base," Milena said. "Told him we're under quarantine, and you and Shepard won't be reporting for duty for the next few days." Ronan blinks at her. "Quarantine?" She shrugs. "He has a fever. That means he has some kind of infection. It might be contagious." Now there's something he hadn't thought of. "You think?" "I think if it is, we're already exposed," Milena says. "We live together, share food." Ronan nods. The squad, the cop who arrested Shepard, and whoever was sharing a cell with him have also probably been exposed. So yeah, Milena says, quarantine till the results come back. And then? Milena looks down at the steamer basket full of vegetables and shrugs. I've never seen anything like this, Ronan. The next 2 days suck. Ronan's paranoid for himself, waiting to be struck with a headache and start to lose his mind. It doesn't happen, and when he checks with Milena, she claims to feel fine, too. Shepard does not feel fine. They take turns watching him, like guard duty. It's better when he's sleeping. When he's awake, he's paranoid, unhappy, and trying poorly to hide his terror. He's not aggressive anymore, though. Ronan doesn't worry about Milena watching him. Their friend has no short-term memory. No matter how many times they tell him his name, their names, and that he lives there, Shepard forgets within a half hour or so. And then he starts up with the same line of questions. It's annoying as all hell, and also frighteningly sad. I don't think I belong here, Shepard tells Ronan, utterly sincerely, the following afternoon. Yeah, you do, Ronan replies. You live here. I don't think so. Well, you do. Shepard paces the confines of the living room, while Ronan watches from the couch. This isn't my home. Yeah, it is. He's had the same conversation with Shepard about 14 times. Milena had it another 30 that morning. I think I belong somewhere else, Shepard says. He looks at the front door, which is locked and bolted. We're all you got, buddy, Ronan says. Sit down. Slowly, Shepard obeys. He sits next to Ronan, but with a lot of space between them. Read a book, Ronan suggests. He tosses one of the children's books at Shepard. Stop looking at the door. You aren't going anywhere. Shepard catches the book and opens it. He glances at the pages, then closes it. I can't read this, he tells Ronan. I don't know this language. He scowls. I knew this isn't my world. You're a liar. It's your world now, Ronan says, having had this argument too many times today to try to convince Shepard of it again. Look at the pictures. Dr. Hexarl said he'll call as soon as the results are in, Milena tells Ronan when they switch off guard duty after dinner time cleanup. The morning, if he can. Good, Ronan says. He figures Milena hates this as much as he does. You know, Milena says, tilting her head at where Shepard is bedding down, there's one good thing about this. Ronan stares at her, disbelieving. What? He sleeps through the night, Milena says. He doesn't scream anymore. He doesn't wake up. Because he doesn't remember, Ronan says. That's not good. Milena shrugs. I know, she says, but I wouldn't mind if those memories are gone for good. Milena shrugs. I know, she says, but I wouldn't mind if those memories are gone for good. Ronan disagrees. He knows Shepard would, too, even though he's lying still and slumbering in the living room. However awful the memories are, the ones that make him shriek and arch awake every night, they're part of Shepard's life and among all that he has left of his world. However awful the memories are, the ones that make him shriek and arch awake every night, they're part of Shepard's life and among all he has left of his world. Dr. Hexarl calls the next day at lunch, contacting Milena on her hospital transceiver that's been sitting ominously on the table all day. Milena answers and listens intently, silently, for a few minutes. Are you serious? She interrupts, looking shocked. Ronan watches her, waiting. She sounds surprised, but not upset, like the doc didn't just give Shepard a death sentence. I'll bring him in right away, she promises. Send another hospital vehicle, please. She turns off the transceiver and lowers it from her ear. Curison fever, she tells Ronan. Can you believe it? He stares at her. Adults don't get that, he says, and they don't get like that. He points where Shepard is surveying the living room with suspicion. Satidan adults don't get that, she replies. It was only a matter of time before he was exposed to something he didn't have immunity to. Maybe this is what happens when adults get Curison fever. Ronan shakes his head, unbelieving. I had it when I was 10, he says. It was just the flu. The hospital got a family in from the Coralis colony, Milena says. The children had a new strain of Curison fever. Shepard must have been exposed when they were teasing him in the pediatric ward. She makes a face. Hey, there's a patch of Venturi plant growing outside by the curb. Would you go pick it all? Aren't you going to give him a shot? Ronan asks. Milena nods. It can't hurt to make him eat some, she says. Ronan waits a second, just looking at her. One of the Corallus colony children died. So Ronan jerks a handful of Venturi plant up out of their tiny yard. Milena washes it, puts it in a bowl with some oils and a dash of spices, and they give it to Shepard as a salad. He eats it, slowly and resentfully, while they wait for the hospital vehicle to arrive. At the hospital, Shepard gets a whole IV bag full of Venturi extract and spends the next day unconscious. Milena and Ronan stay the night in the empty gurney on the other side of the room, waiting for him to wake up. When he finally does, it's a huge relief to see recognition in his eyes when he looks up at them. Hey, Ronan says. Hi, John, Milena says, patting his hair until he pulls away. How long have I been asleep? Shepard asks, sounding like his usual self. A day, Ronan tells him, to which he makes a face. How's your memory? Milena asks, though Ronan can tell just by the way he's looking at them. I know who you are, Shepard says, and I know who I am, and I know where I am, and I know I want to go home. Good enough, says Ronan, reaching out to pluck off Shepard's IV. Eager to leave, Shepard gets dressed quickly, and Milena speeds up the discharge process. Can I kill those guys in pediatrics? Shepard asks as they walk down the hospital corridor. Sure, says Ronan. No, Milena says. I'll take care of it. We have to go to work tomorrow? Shepard asks Ronan when they arrive home. I haven't told them you're out of quarantine yet, Milena says. Good, Shepard nods. I know I just slept for a day, but I feel like I need to do it for a whole week. Me too, Ronan says. My bed is in the living room, Shepard observes, tilting his head. We had to watch you, Ronan tells him. You kept wanting to leave. Not so much, Shepard says, stripping the sheets off and picking up his mattress. He carries it off toward his bedroom. Good night. Sleep well, Milena calls after him. Ronan and Milena go to bed shortly after that. It's been a long, hard, and awful few days. He's going to ask Milena not to mention Shepard's better for a while, though eventually the squad is going to show up at their door. Ronan's almost asleep when his wife elbows him lightly in the side. Huh? He rolls his head toward her. What? Hear that? Milena whispers. Ronan does. It's Shepard, screaming.